You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Nicole again.
Yay!
Yes! So,
you guys like me. You invited me back.
Yes, we really liked you. We liked you so much that that we actually asked you to be on the show as a permanent host, guest, commentator, if you will, and you said yes. So
yes, I love it because I could get my geek on even more now.
It doesn't get much more geekier than a dedicated comic book podcast, let me tell you. Especially, apparently, based on last week featuring McFeely and I pulling random stuff out of nowhere. So, awesome.
You talking about that Ty Stone thing?
Yeah, and we still have no resolution for that. So, I'm going to have to, send an email or something. Or start a letter-writing campaign to Dan Slott. Please, for the love of God.
We should all hit him up with tweets and just, inundate him with tweets and just drive him crazy about it. Who is this guy? What is this secret?
We must know.
We need to know.
JD and McFeely demand it. today it is Fanboy Versus Spoilers, as we are going to be talking about the Fantastic Four issue that came out this week that we've been talking about for the last few months. Now, let me start and say, if for some reason you have been living under a rock, and under that rock you have not had access to the Fantastic Four issue involving the death, and or you have not had access to Twitter, Facebook, the news media, Google, your friends, neighbors, dogs, cats, or other things, and don't know who died.
Anything that has to do with electronic media or social.
And not even necessarily that.
No, I mean, random people on the street, a bus, bird flying by.
You would have to be at the bottom of the ocean not have heard of this.
If any of these things are the case and you do not know, you need to stop the show now, go read it, and then you can come back. Or if you don't care, we're going to spoil it, so you're going to know. Not like that didn't happen already, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Later.
Solitary confinement, maybe your only choice.
Yes. So
that's at the end of the show, so you can listen until then. Don't shut off now.
I can't guarantee that. I can't guarantee that I'm not going to mention ahead of time. But anyway, so we'll get there. But there's some other news and news things that we can discuss for now. I'm going to be very angry in this episode for some reason, but you'll find
anger.
Out several reasons.
JD Smash.
Usually, because I usually have ridiculous opinions that aren't held by the general public. So we'll see what happens. So McFeely, news, yes.
Yeah, there's not a heck of a lot of it flying about, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
There's one piece that I saw.
There's something new that was just announced today.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Hanging on with the same thing, which is that British actor Henry Cavill has been cast as Superman in Zack Snyder's Superman movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who the hell is this guy?
He's in the Tudors.
He was in the front running to play Superman whenever McGee was going to be directing it, and then when Brett Ratner was going to be directing it, but when Bryan Singer came on to do Superman Returns, he replaced him with Brandon Routh.
Hmm.
I don't know who he is otherwise.
Now, the only reason
I know the Tudors, I know that show, I've never watched it, but I know all of it.
Brian and I were talking about this, and my only point of concern, not for myself, because I don't really care, I hate Superman, but there may be some potential fan rage, and no offense, McFeely, or to our wonderful British listening audience, but I do believe he is British.
Yeah, so? He is British.
Yeah, there's some people that sort of have this false notion that Superman stands for, truth, justice, and the American way.
Yes,
that's true.
I don't care. I'm just saying there could be controversy. I am pre-guessing that there may be nerd rage.
If he knows how to act, who cares?
That's what I'm saying.
There's a bunch of straight people that play gay parts all the time, and vice versa. Why can't a British man play an American?
Precisely.
We had an Australian that played in a movie called The Patriot. I think we're okay now.
You know, that's actually a very good point.
That's true.
Yeah.
British actors are better at playing Americans than Americans are at playing British.
Who cares?
But British, for a small island, for like two small islands, there's a large range of accents.
You had a fucking empire going on.
Yeah, I know. You had the whole thing, and then.
Well, there's an awfully large range of accents over in your neck of the woods, too. It's just that so much of your country is empty.
This is true. That is a good point. some of it is in people's heads. But. Sorry. But anyway, no. Yeah, but there is sort of an American standard. Whereas, I mean, I know there's a British standard as well. But it's like it's harder to get away with British standard because I don't know that there's a lot of people that speak British standard, but American standard is so common, like on the news. Like that's typically what people speak if they do any kind of like news reporting or anything over here. So we're much more receptive.
That's that weird fake, today on CNN.
Well, right, but it's not the inflection is different, but at least the accent is the same. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. Like I said, I don't have a problem with it. I'm sure he's going to be an absolutely – I'm sure that he'll be just as awesome as Superman always is.
Do you think this movie will actually go through? I mean, it's gone through so many directors as it is.
I mean, this movie –
I think at this point, yeah.
Now that Zack Snyder's got it, it's going to happen.
I mean, it's going to happen. Oh, yeah. I predict it will be filled with – slow motion to fast motion to slow motion shots.
You know it.
That will be straight out of some issues of Superman. And
I mean,
people will
faster than a speeding bullet. That right there tells you what's happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So.
It's just going to be Smallville on the screens, what it's going to be.
God. Speaking of that. Let's just go to that right now.
You just opened Pandora's box.
Because we are not the only like semi-fandom that's really pissed off right now. For a week or so, 2 weeks, I've been kind of excited. You know, for some reason, I've gotten into watching Smallville. Why? I have no idea. I don't know. But I have. So, I get to Friday evening and I'm doing other stuff. Cause typically what I do is I record Smallville and then I watch it back.
How'd you like that Vampire Diaries?
So what happened? So I go to watch it and I go to my TiVo and it's not there. And I'm like, what the hell? And I go and it's like, and I can see the end of Supernatural, but my TiVo keeps switching between Supernatural and Nikita, and I'm like, what the hell? So I go to my friend. Now, she doesn't watch – Melissa, she's been on the show before. She loves Supernatural, and I say, was Supernatural on? And she's like, yeah, it's recording. I'm like, I don't know what happened to Smallville. And so I go and I look it up. Well, apparently there's some mayoral like debate on somewhere, and so at noon on Friday – CW announces, oh, yeah, we're going to delay Smallville and Supernatural till sometime next week or whatever.
So it was supposed to be on, and I'm not crazy, because I honestly thought they were saying it was going
to
be on.
Yes, it was supposed to be on.
And then it came on, and it was like something else. I was like, what in the hell?
So now they're supposed to be on Wednesday night, I believe, is when they're actually going to be playing those.
Really?
But, oh, my God. Like, what the hell? Like, you didn't know that debate was on? Like you and like who cares? It was in like one area.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know where it was. Like you're seriously pissed off your entire viewing base for mayoral candidate.
Honestly, JD, nobody cares except for me and you. Because nobody else is watching.
Well, okay, yeah, the Smallville viewing audience may be smaller, but I know the Supernatural viewing audience is a little bit larger, and I know that they were really fired up. Like, I went on the CW boards, and they were pissed.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, those people are kind of scary.
What a tragic loss to civilization.
So, yeah,
don't knock the Supernatural TV.
Hey, that is a fire.
You know,
up.
I tried to watch Supernatural one time years ago.
You don't have a vagina. And
that is also a problem.
Dude, Robert Englund was on it recently.
You do not have a vagina, and you do not read slash fiction, and these two things make it difficult. To read. But Melissa does.
I'll tell you what it was. It was the episode where they went looking for the Wendigo.
How do we even remember that episode?
They were looking for this thing called a Wendigo. Stop fucking pronouncing it wrong!
Americans at work again.
You know, that's your fault, McFeely. You watched the wrong episode. That's your problem.
Yeah, surely. So anyway, we don't talk about Supernatural on the show that much. If we did, we'd have Melissa back on, and she could tell us all about it. But
yeah.
So there we go. Anything else? Do we have other pictures coming? Something else was announced, it seemed.
There's news. I got news.
I'll let you go.
There's not much of it this week, but then we've had the DC revealing 14 Flashpoint limited series tie-ins.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yes. So Batman, Knight of Vengeance. These are all three-issue minis. Yeah. Batman, Knight of Vengeance, Dead Man and the Flying Graysons, Citizen Cold, Deathstroke and the Curse of the Ravager, The Outsider, Abin Sur Green Lantern, Project Superman, Frankenstein and the Creatures of the Unknown,
that sounds
Secret
cool.
Seven, we were talking about Secret Seven last week, Emperor Aquaman, Wonder Woman and the Furies, Lois Lane and the Resistance, Kid Flash Lost, and The World of Flashpoint. So that's a lot of shit.
Did they?
With the sheer number of these things, this, to my mind, reinforces earlier speculation. I think we were talking about it a little bit last week, that this is some kind of Age of Apocalypse-esque thing.
Well, just look at the titles.
They talk about how this is not a parallel universe. This is home was also a tag that was revealed at some point this week. So it seems like this is some kind of timeline changed mainstream DCU. And presumably these minis will be replacing select titles for the month of their publication. The way the Age of Apocalypse had Factor X replacing X Factor, or the Amazing X-Men, or the Astonishing X-Men, and Gambit, and the Externals, and X-Man, and all the rest of it replaced the standard X-Men titles for 4 months. I would have to frankly hope that that's the case, because 14 miniseries otherwise is like Gwensling. That's a bit crazy.
How could I keep up, you know? Wow.
Blackest Night filled 7 hardcovers, and there were still only 7 miniseries attached to them.
Wow.
And tie-in issues.
So when is this supposed to happen?
When are these slated for? I don't think they gave actually... They didn't actually reveal any publication dates for this.
So it's still in production?
Yeah, but it seems like early summer, I think, is when we're really looking at Flashpoint to hit.
Do you honestly think all of them are really going to go through? All 14?
Oh, yeah,
is it 14? Is it 14?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently, there might even be a 15th to be revealed yet as well.
But yeah, I mean, even by the titles, though, I mean, that they definitely, I mean, like I said, Wonder Woman and the Furies, I mean, that's just, you know, yeah. So, but really, I mean, that's a lot. Did Joe Quesada take over at DC and I didn't know it?
Yeah.
I mean, I could have sworn he was still at Marvel.
Well, I would say that maybe some of these might be minis and some of them might be in the stead of the regular books, Age of Apocalypse style. I just can't believe they would release 14. Yeah,
that would be better than what DC does, because, I don't know, Shadowlands, for example. Dear God.
I'd like it much better if they were just one-shots.
Yeah, but it had, like, how many side stories with how many tie-ins for, like, 3 issues just like that?
Four?
Yeah. Which was 3 too many.
Maybe 5.
So.
And they were.
Yeah, I think it'd be better if it would just be one shot. So I don't want a minis. I mean, like, one issue, that's all I need. Okay, I get the idea. It's not Wonder Woman on, you know, Themyscira. It's Wonder Woman, you know, just doing this, you know, or something, you know?
Yeah, you need that 3-story arc, though. Come on. If they're $2.99, they've got to make you buy them somehow.
Flashpoint will run for a while, so they want to do like the Age of Apocalypse did and create the illusion that the whole universe has truly changed. Because, like, there wasn't a, you know, all the X-Men books were replaced with the Age of Apocalypse stuff for those 4 months. But
yeah,
they can't obviously replace the entire DC universe. So,
but they're not saying which ones they're replacing, though. They're,
no,
they're
if they even people. Are, this is just speculation. But uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dead Man and the Flying Grayson sounds like fun, though.
That sounds really interesting, actually.
No, I want the monster one sounds good to me, but I like monsters.
Frankenstein and the Creatures of the Unknown.
Correct.
That sounds cool.
Speaking about Dead Man for just a second, years ago, didn't Don that sold Transformers? That I can't remember his last name right now. Murphy. Robot? Don Murphy. Didn't he have the rights to a Dead Man film? Wasn't he talking about doing a Dead Man film a couple years ago?
I have no idea.
No. Wow. I'm the only one that knows this. Okay.
The only other bit of news then is just a rumor, really, but it's coming out of Bleeding Cool, who usually do have their fingers on the pulse. It is saying that Marvel may join DC in the holding the line at $2.99. They're saying that Marvel will be dipping a toe in the water of 20 page books at $2.99, though not necessarily at the expense of 22 page comics. The plan, according to the report, is for 20-page comics to release 13 issues a year instead of 12, and so freelancers won't lose out on their rates.
So that's no different then, right? I mean, essentially, the page count...
Because you're paying for more content. You're paying for the page rate is better.
So,
13 issues of 20 pages a story a year is 260 pages. Okay. Four less than 12 issues of 22 pages.
So you're saying my comics are going to be cheaper. That's all that matters.
So wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Okay, so it's 13 issues at $3.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, and instead of 12 issues at $4.
So I get like less of Cap and Iron Man talking before they hit something.
Okay. So it's $10 less a year, and then you said the page count is what versus what?
It'd be the same way DC's doing it now, 20 pages.
20 times 13, so that's 260, and then normally it's 22?
Yeah, 24. So that's four pages less a year.
So 4 pages less a year for $10, okay, that's a decent deal. Okay.
If true. That's just a rumor. We don't normally report on the rumors, but and to believe Marvel wouldn't eventually cave into the notion.
Until DC gets to the point that they're starting to gain more ground on Marvel, I don't see why would
they
Marvel
really
do
are
that?
At this point.
Are they really starting to? I knew Marvel had been up.
They're picking a lot more of the top 10 spots since in the whole Blackest Night return of Bruce Wayne, just general Grant Morrison's Batman period, and comic sales as a whole are down, but the I think it's just becoming increasingly obvious that the $4 price point isn't scanning.
Yeah, it's not. And so that's good. I mean, that's exactly what should happen within the marketplace. If DC's going to say they're $2.99 and then their, you know, market share goes up, Marvel's going to have to be competitive, and that would be great.
I mean, Wizard's dead, Marvel. Okay, look at the writing on the wall.
Toy Fair.
Another bit of news. Yeah, Toy Fair and Wizard. Go on. Bye-bye.
They'll be back as online magazines. We were talking about this a little bit last week because the news had just came out last Sunday.
Yeah.
But
so, I haven't read... I used to read Toy Fair a lot, obviously, like back in the early 2000s. But
and I used to love Wizard like several years back. Like I didn't get the first issue, but I started with issue 2 and I read it for years and years. But it's been like 10 years since I've read Wizard. So
that's probably why they're going away.
Well, I never read Wizard regularly, but I just came to the Wizard. I felt had become as much of a hindrance to the comics books, you know, industry. It never truly felt like it could be honest Wizard, because it would lose favor with the companies that supported the damn thing if it had to start being honest about the quality of the work that was being put out. So as much as it could maybe be a little bit more critical of the thing when it actually got around to reviewing it, like, it had been just as guilty of hyping up something that didn't deserve it by the end, you know.
Am I misremembering, but when Wizard, like, started up their own kind of comics, did they, like, start really hyping the hell out of those more than Marvel, DC, or other independent stuff? I can't remember if that's correct or not. Did that really happen?
I don't remember that. I don't even remember Wizard doing their own comics.
Well, they had something. It was something like Bull or something, Wild Bull or something. I can't remember what it was called. It didn't last long, but I don't know. Maybe it's just
Toy Fair
for
a while. I did read Toy Fair for a couple of years, but I stopped that more because it wasn't even time to read it along with everything else I was trying to read.
It was okay, but the problem with a magazine like that, especially like Wizard or with like Toy Fair, is that because it's print media, it's always going to be behind the news. It's
particularly for that crowd of people.
Yeah,
nerds get their news from the internet.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. That's true. I mean, yeah,
like Toy Fair was awesome for like seeing like the new like Transformers or G.I. Joe or something that's coming out. But then as soon as the internet was like huge, then you don't need it anymore. It's like, hey, look, there's a Warpath coming out. But Toy Fair's not covering that yet.
Yeah, really. Yeah, exactly. I mean, by the time it would hit, you know, Toy Fair, we'd already seen it, digested it, and either rejected it or been excited about it. And that just became an afterthought. So what do you got, Twisted Mego Theater? I mean, yeah, that's funny and all, but I'm not going to buy a whole issue of a magazine just for that, you know?
And Garib Sheamus had been progressively going crazier and crazier in the production of the whole thing. So it's no great surprise that this came eventually.
Yeah, well.
But they say it's going to be coming back as an online magazine. Exactly what that means, we don't really know yet.
Well, that's what a lot of magazines are doing, especially like tech magazines and stuff. I mean, look like Wired and some other stuff. I mean, they're putting out articles and basically pushing them direct to online media, and then they either do pay-per-view or whatever. They have a certain pay model or advertising model that they use to do that. So it's way of the future, people. Media's changing. Magazine, print media going away. Comics, though, hopefully they're going to stay around. That's the idea. That's what we try to promote here on Fanboy Versus. So anything else? Any other news?
That's all the news I got. Unless there's anything else.
I don't. No, I don't. So, okay.
I did.
So, I guess we'll get through it. And I always love to start with Triplett. I don't know why. I just do. So.
Yeah, I don't know why either. I don't ever have anything interesting to say about comics.
Yeah.
That's probably why I go to you first.
Oh,
get you out of the way.
That.
And then, no, I'm kidding. No, it's not true.
Let's see. Okay, I'll tell you what I read, and then I read a lot, so I don't want to talk about all of it. So I'll let you guys kind of pick and choose what you want me to talk about.
Ooh, we get to choose.
Yeah, okay, I read Fantastic Four, but we're saving that for the end because that's the big spoiler-filled story.
Yes. We'd have to light you on fire if you were to reveal.
Oh, don't.
I see what you did there.
Sinner.
Okay. I read Action Comics number 897. I read Secret Avengers number 9. I read Avengers number 9. Hey, wait, they're both the same number. That's awesome. New Avengers number 8.
Isn't
that
just
was
the most ridiculous thing?
They all came out the same week. Why are they doing this to me? Those are like $4 an issue.
Like schedule. Seriously, like.
I mean, come on.
I mean, it's like you got Avengers and New Avengers and Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate Doom all came out this week. Like, what was Bendis doing that he farted everything out this week?
Was it
Secret Avengers comes out on the same week that Captain America came out as well?
So somebody was busy over Christmas vacation.
Yeah, so that's what I read. So, take your picks. I want to talk about Action Comics because
we'll talk about
action
and new. I read new, so I can
and talk about new.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, did you guys read Avengers or Secret Avengers? Because those are cool books to talk about. If somebody,
I read them both too. Yeah.
Okay, so you can talk about them. All right. Yeah. Okay. So let me start with New Avengers. We'll do that one first. So New Avengers, so you guys both, did everybody here read it? Or?
Yeah, I read it.
I read it. Yeah. Nicole, no.
Sorry.
Okay.
You should be reading it. It's the best Avengers comic.
It's one of those comics that have so much going for it. It's, I'm afraid I'm going to be lost if I pick it up.
Yeah.
It's kind of the best time to pick it up.
It's pretty straightforward.
This issue was a very good one to pick it up on, actually. Yeah.
Now, which number is it?
This is number eight.
Number eight. Because yeah. I did see it in one of my comic book stores, and I'm like, it looks interesting, but I think it'd be lost. So, but you know what? I could put it on my list. What's another one on my list? Really?
Yeah, sure. It's only money.
Yeah, don't forget to get Thor, because Thor is awesome. We told you to get that last week.
I put Thor on my list. Unfortunately, yeah. I won't get it until next month. So.
Yeah. But, okay, so New Avengers. This issue, it pretty much just starts off. It's basically Luke Cage and Jessica going out on a date. You know, they're married, but, you know, they've got a babysitter now. So they're getting to go out on a date because they haven't been on a date for a while. And they pretty much are just, for the big first half of the issue, pretty much just having a conversation. Because, you know, Bendis likes to do nothing where we just see two characters just talk for, like, you know, 10 pages. Which isn't bad.
Been a little while since we've seen him really bust one of those out, though.
Yeah. I like
this. This is true Alias style stuff. This is the way he was really doing it in Alias, where a lot of people would just stand around and shout epithets at one another. No, but listen, but not what I am saying is.
The full page with the sort of the snaking dialogue balloons is awesome.
Yeah. The waitress is just kind of waiting for him to take their order. She looks uncomfortable.
Yeah, and not just for that, but for the discussion, which is the main point of that discussion is that Luke is suggesting that she take the name Power Woman.
I agree. Awesome. For that.
Oh my god! Yes,
110%.
Power Man.
He's Power Man, and she should be Power Woman. You know,
she married him, so she should take his name.
Exactly.
I'm not sure whether that's offensive or awesome. I can't.
Equal parts both.
I can't decide. But
and I'm loving his yellow shirt too.
Oh yes,
yeah.
He's rocking that yellow turtleneck thing.
Oh, I wish I could see this. Oh my gosh,
it needs a costume again.
The art is really interesting in this, though.
Yeah, it's not Stuart Immonen. Yeah,
no.
It's
if we can expect Stuart Immonen to come back to the book now.
Oh really? Oh,
because he's working on Fear itself.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure if we can expect him back before that's over and done with.
I doubt it.
I hope he comes back, though, because I really like him. This is Daniel Acuña. Is that how you pronounce it?
Daniel Acuña, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah.
It's really good. If they want to keep this guy, if he's going to be the guy to kind of replace him for however long he's going to be replacing him, keep him. He's really good.
Mm-hmm. I've never been his biggest fan, but I think this is the issue that I've enjoyed his work the most on. He did Marvel's very short-lived Eternals series a year or two back, and I don't think he's ever really done like a series before that. You kind of just see him popping up here and there on different things.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he'll be around on this series.
It looks good, though. It really works for me. I don't think I've ever picked up anything he's worked on before, but. As soon as I opened it, I noticed this. Hey, it's not Stuart Immonen. Oh well, yeah. I guess this is finally his take a break issue. Let's see who they got to fill in for him. Wow, this looked really nice. But so they're having the conversation, and the conversation's basically about Jessica's trying to decide if she wants to go back to being a hero, and Luke's kind of pushing her to it, and he makes the suggestion, oh, you should be Power Woman, which we were just talking about.
I love it.
So while they're talking, something crashes like right outside the restaurant that they're eating at, and it's Miss Marvel fighting something. It looks like a spaceship or something. I don't know what it's like, a spear or something. And Luke goes running out and see what's going on, and then we get him saying, seriously, sweet Christmas.
That's awesome.
People need to remember that he talks like that.
We don't get that very often, but when we do, it's worth it.
I just really annoys me when Luke Cage actually swears. Yeah. Or, you know, they do the bleepy things. Because I think I may have said it on the show before, but like my real first exposure to Luke Cage was John Ostrander and Pascal Ferry's Heroes for Hire series in 97. And he didn't want to join up with Iron Fist's new Heroes for Hire team, but he kind of wound up forced into it whenever the UFOs came a call. This is when Luke Cage lived in a disused movie theater. How very urban. the UFOs came a calling, you know. And, you know, he said, "Sweet Christmas," and Ironclad asked him, "Seriously, you really swear like that? Why don't you swear like a normal person?" And his response was that his grandma didn't like it. And that's always defined Luke Cage's attitude for me. So it always bugs me when he really swears.
That's fair.
His granny didn't like it.
That's a good point. Yeah, that should be in, like, they should know that. No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with it. Yeah, I'm fine with him just saying it. I just don't want him to say it like every issue. Because he said it like every issue back in the 70s, right? I mean, that was his shtick, right? Just every issue.
Yeah,
Sweet Christmas.
That was like clobbering time, you know?
Yeah. So like when like the world's about to explode, I'm fine if he just spreads out a Sweet Christmas. I'm good with that.
Sweet Christmas.
So he said it here because he sees the spear, and on top of the spear is Dr. Doom.
Dum-dum-dum.
Dum-dum-dum.
What?
Yeah.
I've heard about that guy before.
He's bad news.
That's what
I always remember a really famous comic panel when there's this one panel or two of Doctor Doom and Luke Cage when Luke Cage I think he hijacks a Fantastic Four vehicle and he flies it into Castle Doom or the Latverian embassy or whatever it is, and Doctor Doom just confronts him. It's because Dr. Doom had hired Luke Cage because when he was a hero for hire for a job and never paid him, so Luke's come to collect. And Dr. Doom just says, "When I heard about a crazy black man flying a Fantastic Four aircraft into Latverian airspace, I knew it had to be you." And Luke Cage just retorts with, "Where my money, honey?"
Wow.
That's awesome. Okay, so...
anyway, yes.
getting back to the issue, of course, you know, Luke, you know, attacks, you know, Dr. Doom, they get in a fight. Jessica calls the Avengers trying to get some help.
She says Avengers or something.
Yeah, she says, "It's me, Jessica, get the Avengers over here, get them to Avengers Assemble!" And she's screaming into the cell phone.
Anybody really noticed how in the Avengers cartoon, and just generally in real life, Avengers Assemble doesn't work as a spoken phrase?
No, it doesn't. It's not the same. It's not the same off the page. No.
So maybe when they say it in the cartoon, or even when they say it in the movie that's coming out, they should just have like a big bubble appear over like head with the logo and everything, so that it would just stand out.
I don't mind it in the cartoon. I've just come to accept that that's one of those things. So.
Oh, I'm not saying I mind it. I'm just saying it's something that sort of sticks out, is that you can't say it. It's got like too many syllables or something.
It just seems awkward, I guess.
It's like clumsy.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing only Thor could really get away with saying.
Yeah.
That's why Thor's awesome.
Maybe he'll be the one to say it.
Dude, that's how Thor ends, the end of the movie. Screams Avengers Assemble.
You just spoiled it. Dang it, now I can't watch that movie anymore. You just spoiled it.
That's right.
Awesome.
Jeez.
All about spoilers.
Jeez.
Okay. So
let's see. It's a Doombot. We're shocked.
Oh my god.
It sounds like we're deferring, but there's really not a lot to actually say.
It's a big fight. That's all it is. And then, you know, Jessica saves Luke. And beats the hell out of him, and then they find
with
out
a
it's
hydrant.
Yeah, with a hydrant.
And then, so then they end up, the hydrant.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, they find out it's a Doombot, and it's kind of funny the little conversation that they have about, you know, what a Doombot is. They're talking about what's a Doombot. That sounds so stupid. And I think that they make note that. How Luke now kind of feels bad because he got beat up by a Doombot, and Jessica felt good because she thought she beat Doom. You know? Yeah.
And then you just had that little bend moment of deactivating the Doombot, which seemed like it seemed kind of out of place, but I don't know, whatever. Anyway.
Well, you got to get to the power source. It's in the chest. Everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah, because it's important. It's important to have two panels or so that deal with that. You know, but then we get back to, what was her, Felicia Hand? I can't remember her. Jessica Foot. What is her name? Hand. Hand and Foot. Da, 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 da. No. Anyway.
That'd be awesome.
Semi non-important character.
Victoria? Is that her name? I don't know.
Yes, Victoria but, Hand. Yes.
So they're talking about, you know, Dr. Doom, and she's saying there's stuff we can't talk about. And, you know,
because of Spider-Man.
Because this is Spider-Man.
He just raises his hand and goes, excuse me? Is it because of me?
Yes.
Yes. Is it because I'm wearing this mask? Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think that, like, Jessica says that she's made her decision, and I believe she says that she wants to be a hero, and she says, I'll go by the name Power Woman. And Luke Cage says, booyah, ha ha, big win, awesome. And then she says, never mind.
Which, not being a hero, but I think
to
she's
the Power Woman.
She's not going to do the Power Woman now.
Because he said, booyah.
And I'm assuming this is Spider-Man. There's the dialogue afterwards.
Yeah. Yes, like, women don't like when you say booyah. White people shouldn't say it at all. And Spider-Man says, how do you know I'm white? I'm wearing a full-body costume and mask. And then I'm assuming it's Luke saying, really? You really need to ask that question out loud?
Oh. Although my favorite part is on the other page where his coffee cup says, Power Dad.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
that reminded me of that bit from Dan Slott's She-Hulk. You remember that one, Triplet? Spidey's on the stand recounting the reasons he believes J. Jonah Jameson hates him because they finally sued Jameson for libel. This is early Dan Slott She-Hulk. And he lists off all the possible reasons and he just says, well, I think the real reason.
Oh, it's because he's black.
Because I'm black. Everybody turns to look at Jameson and they go, I didn't know. I would never have ever.
I forgot about that. Oh God, I need to go back and read that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, so that interview consisted of me calling up better moments from other comics.
Wow, that really was what that review was. Sorry, Bendis.
That's still a good comic.
No, it's good stuff. I mean, Squirrel Girl wasn't in it, but I still think it was a quality
sentence. What's the point of putting Squirrel Girl in the comic? Outrage!
I know.
Where's my Squirrel Girl?
The whole reason I picked it up, I was expecting at least a panel of Squirrel Girl, but none.
See, she'll be in it. You know, there'll be something that'll happen, and they'll need rescuing, and the who will be there? Avengers Mansion, the babysitter, of course. And she's
that's right. And I mean, she is again, as we have said before, the most powerful character in the Marvel Universe.
That's what I keep hearing about her.
I'm telling you, dude. She beat Doom. Like, Doom? Like, she wouldn't even broke a sweat. She'd had him down.
Are you sure it wasn't a Doom bot?
No, it was the Doom. No. It was the Doom.
I think that has been, like, repeatedly stated that it was absolutely, definitely the for real Doom.
Yeah. As well as
Doom
Thanos.
The Doom bot joke has been made. But...
Yeah, and Thanos as well. Because Watsu.
That was a clone.
No, Watsu confirmed it was the real Thanos.
Yeah, but then a couple of issues later...
They made it clear that it wasn't. But anyway, at that point...
I need to read these issues because they sound awesome.
I'm telling you, dude. No, the best one is just from a couple of years ago when she beat the crap out of Deadpool at the beginning of the... was that at the end of...
It was at the end. It was the JLX Deadpool Christmas special where Deadpool has just decided to crash with the Great Lakes Avengers for the holiday season.
Yes.
And he hasn't left by, like, January, so they have to go, Squirrel Girl, will you please kick him out?
That's after Avengers Misassembled, right? It's, like, after that. Okay. Yeah.
That was because they were the GLX in that. Or were they, yeah, they were the GLX in that.
Yeah, the GLX.
They changed their name.
Yeah. Again, good times from other comics.
It sounds like she needs to get her own series.
No way. It wouldn't work.
Maybe a one-shot or something, honestly. You have to be careful with your Squirrel Girl.
Yeah. It does. That character's not going to work. It's like Deadpool. You know, like you can't oversaturate
like
the market.
It sounded like a warning you give a child. You have to be careful with your Squirrel Girl.
Tweet that.
Okay, moving on. Okay. So, yeah, I said I wanted to talk about Action Comics, number 897. So, like, in a couple of issues, my loving, awesome Action Comics isn't going to be good anymore, right? Because, like, at issue 900, it's going to end with Lex Luthor stuff, right? I mean, it's going to be...
Well, I don't know. It's just, it says Superman's back in 900. I don't know quite what that means for the Lex stuff. Yeah. I would assume 900 is the final chapter of the Black Ring, at least.
I mean, it feels like it's getting... I mean, because this is like part 8 of the Black Ring. Yeah. So I feel like it's getting close to the end. Yeah,
what
I feel like...
Is this again, 998?
This is 897.
Or 897, whatever numbers, yes.
Yeah. So it's getting there. But what's cool about this issue is it starts up, it's like Lex and the Lois robot are going to Arkham Asylum. Because he needs to talk to the Joker about something, and in the issue he's Lex and the robot in the back of the limousine, and he's like reading the newspaper, and he's now responding to the news about Bruce Wayne saying that he funds Batman. He's reading the Gotham Gazette. It says Bruce Wayne funds Batman on for the header of the newspaper, and he says, "Wayne, I can't believe it. You think you know somebody? He's letting down the human race."
Yeah.
You know? So I just thought that was kind of funny. But so the reason that he's going to see the Joker is you know how they've been looking for the energy of the what was left of the Black Lanterns. He's been trying to find that stuff. They've located some of it is coming from within the Joker's holding cell within Arkham Asylum. So they think they found another one. So he's going to visit him to find out what the hell's going on. How could it be there and they not know it? Because every other time that they've encountered it, it's always been like this big orb thing that's like in the middle of like the Antarctic or, you know, in a jungle or something. It's something that you'd notice, you know? So they're going in, and one of Lex's assistants that's kind of been helping him, one of the scientist guys that's been helping him track the energy source, he mentions that something's been going on within his company. He says that... He says, "I got a reply regarding some inquiries I've been making." He's like talking to the Lois robot. And she says, "Not now." He's thinking. And he comes back. He says, "Damn it, machine." He says, "He needs to know this, especially given how bizarre this latest spear location is. Those news stories and science articles that motivated him to go on this quest, a lot of them seem to have been planted." So, you know, we know like from like previous issues, which you guys even read the issue, that something's going on with the Lois robot. You know, she's not exactly... you know, helping Lex, she's kind of working her own angle, which is kind of weird. Something's going on with that. So she now knows about this, and she says, "Okay, that's worrying, but tell him after." So she doesn't want him to tell Lex before he goes to visit the Joker. So he goes in to see him, and any meeting that you're going to have with the Joker, you try to get information out of him, and he doesn't cooperate.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Let me get my surprise looked on.
Lex walks in and he says, "Joker." And Joker says, "Luther." And then he says, "Hey, you got a haircut." You know?
Nice.
Lex is making jokes. Excellent. And then the Lois robot disables all of the cameras so they can talk privately and tells them, "Hey, we've disabled the cameras so we can talk privately." Then, like, Joker kind of, motions Lex to get closer so that he can, like, whisper something to him. And then he, like, just jumps up in the air with his hands up in the air and scares everybody to death. They think he's going to kill him or something. And Joker says, "Jazz hands!" Starts laughing. I mean, it's basically just a Joker is crazy as shit issue. It's basically...
good, because we needed a whole issue of Action to explain that.
I mean, it's just, they're most of the issues, basically, they're them just kind of talking. And, just kind of like funny little, remarks or something. Like when the Lois robot says, "I've disabled the camera so you can talk privately," Joker responds with, And please, those cameras are differently abled.
Oh wow!
Just like putting on a show for Lex in the issue, and you know they basically just you know have this. It's a talky issue. There's like one guy. There's a table. Lex is at one side. Joker's at the other, and they spend a long time just kind of talking. And you know it's interesting stuff, but I don't want to kind of like you know just you know, go word for word what's going on. And Joker's got these two jars sitting on the table in front of him. And they're just basically talking about, like, Joker knows why he's there. He knows he's looking for something. He doesn't know what it's called, but he knows what it is, and he knows, you know, that it's there. He's discovered it, you know, a long time ago. And he opens one of the jars, and it's just crazy shit. Like, one jar has what looks like a My Little Pony underneath it, and it's talking or something. This comic, it's always weird, so this is just, like, something to expect, you know.
Crazy. It has My Little Pony in it. I've got to get it.
It's a pink My Little Pony, too.
Oh, it's Pinkie Pie. Oh.
She's got stars and everything on her. And, like, Joker says, what? It's just a pony, a magic pony. Like, Lex jumps back thinking that it's going to, like, blow up or something. He says, a magic pony who sings.
It's Pinkie Pie, that's for sure, if it sings.
And then he pulls the other jar up, and underneath it is the black spirits, you know, the black green energy. And Joker basically just wants he wants something before he'll let you know Lex take it and do what he needs with it. And he wants him to expand it because the Joker has figured out that it's a doorway, and he decides that okay, you know, I want to get out of here, make it larger, you know, use your scientist guy to do whatever you need to do, but make the doorway larger so I can just, you know, walk out. And he says something like, oh, there's some people that need to be killing or something like that. And the guy does what he does, because what that is, I don't think they take the black green energy. I think they study it. And then based on, like, studying it, then they have they can, like, locate where I guess the energy's coming from. I think that's what he really wants, not these individual pockets of energy, but like where is it coming from is where he's wanting to go, like the location of the original spot or something. So he gets what, you know, scientist gets what he needs, and then he does what Joker wants, and he expands it. And so the Joker, you know, basically says, you know, see you guys later, and he grabs his bag and goes into it. But then he comes back out and he says, oh no, he says, I heard it all in a second, and it could be terrible. If that's what's going to happen, I'm happier in here. So he's, whatever's in there, he hears something or sees something that scares him. And he tells the scientist guy to change it back quickly because there's something that's inside of it. And then he gives he looks serious. He looks like he's scared. You know, the jokes are over. He's dead serious now. And he says, Lex, this is all I'm going to tell you. Soon, unless you make the wrong choice, you will crack, he says, the biggest joke of all time. So make the right choice for my sake, for all I stand for. When that opportunity comes along, take it seriously. And then he says, oh, they're going to have to make me move to another cell. This thing's spoiling my feng shui because it's just expanding. They can't stop it. So Lex is leaving, and the scientist starts to talk about those articles that were planted. And before Lex can hear about it, like, Lex has already left the room, but the robot, you know, Lois robot and the scientist is still in the room with Joker. The Lois robot pushes him into the spear. And it looks like it absorbs him and it kills him because it's like he's screaming in pain.
Ooh.
And then the Lois robot's like, oh no, oh no. And, like, you know, Joker's just kind of watching it. And then the spear, it looks like it shrinks and disappears. And then, like, Lex comes back into the room with the guards and the Lois robot saying that the Joker did it. And then the Joker just says, I so did. He reminded me so much of that actor. I wanted to see if he'd turn into someone else. You know?
What?
And then, like, the guards just beat the hell out of him as the Joker's laughing and watching the Lois robot leave the room. Then the scene shifts to Las Vegas, a casino in Las Vegas where two security guards are talking about something that's going on. One guy says, there's something going on in our computer core. And they're like, no, there's no way. There's, like, nothing that can get in there. It's, like, it's sealed off and it's automated. So they go to investigate. And lo and behold, who is inside of the inside of this casino's computer core? Larfleeze.
Oh, damn.
And yes. He says, come in. I want you to come in. He says, I have a question for humans. Where is the hairless Lex Luthor? He is looking for something I need. To be continued. Good issue. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Barclays makes all next. Things better.
Yes.
He does, doesn't he?
You need to hurry up and get the friggin' tree out of this art.
Yeah, I mean, this. If you're not reading it, like, at this point, I don't know if it'd be good to pick it up, but yeah, when the trade comes out, anybody that's not reading should definitely try it out. If you want something that's kind
of... End of March. End of freaking March.
Oh, wow. That's a little wild.
You know what, that's not too far if you think about it. I mean, February's just a couple days away.
Yeah, it's far enough, though. It'll be up to part 10 before they get the trade out.
Yeah.
That's true.
In nerd years, that's a long time. So.
But yeah, good awesome. Issue. Really liked it.
And that's it? You're good? You got two?
Yeah,
and you're good.
Yeah, I figured that you guys will talk Secret Avengers or...
somebody.
Yeah, Avengers.
So I think we'll go to Nicole then.
Okay, well, I did have too much in my pull box this week. So I haven't heard anyone else talk about this one yet. The new Infestation coming out?
I got it.
Okay.
Yay,
okay.
Discussions!
So, I'm a sucker for most of the comics that are combining in this, so I'm like, this is a must for me. So, and it's got zombies. Yay! So basically, this book sets up ground zero for the zombies. So, and how they're going to get the four factions into play here. So basically, you're introduced to a gal who's a vampire and a field agent. So there's vampires in it too. It's not just zombies. So
I mean, you know.
Yeah, this is the CVO, which is another IDW series that I've never heard of before, and which they don't appear to have published anything to do with for some time, and something that they have seem to have actively downplayed the role of in the crossover.
Hey, does IDW have True Blood? Is True Blood in this Infestation crossover? Okay.
No, but they kind of got like a Stargate kind of thing going on.
Yeah, no question.
The thing is, how much should I spoil this?
We typically say spoilers out. So,
oh, okay.
You know.
Well, that's how they basically, the zombies come through, is through like a Stargate or a portal, basically, into a place in New Mexico. And you come to find out that this gate is opened into four different universes. Am I explaining this correct, Chris?
Sounds right. I mean, basically, I think the key thing to just for the whole setup is that this is the CVO being called in to clear up after the last whatever happened in IDW's most recent Zombies versus Robots miniseries. Yeah. They've done a couple of those. I'm not sure if any of them are still in.
Do kind of give those notes in there, too. So.
Yeah, there are footnotes in there, so you can definitely... I mean, I don't know anything about these characters, but I was able to pick it up.
I mean, they give you, like, a little bio at the beginning. I mean, it's two sentences, but they get... I mean, you get the point across.
He gets across. I mean, the zombies versus robot zombies are from another dimension, Marvel zombie style, so this is where they came through in that story, and it's basically the CVO's job to come in and clean up, except they come in and find out the portal is still working.
Mm-hmm. The thing that gets to me, this was telling people, I'm like, okay, I know that big boobed women and comics go together like peanut butter and jelly, but she is a little too extreme. She is going to topple over this poor lady.
I like peanut butter and jelly.
Her boobs are
I like
so big.
The other thing, but I agree with
you. It's like she swallowed basketballs. But you know what? She's a vampire. She's supposed to be oversexed. So. But the thing is, with this character, she's a vampire, but she gets turned into a zombie. So she's got this extra special power. So the sides are fighting for her to get the special ability.
So wait, she's a zombie vampire.
She's a zompire, say it right.
So,
and that's how is that different from a lich? No. Okay.
So yeah, but the thing that I liked about this was wasn't actually the real story, it was like the little previews to the rest of the four, because you're like, oh, because it makes you want to read what's coming up. So Transformers is coming out next week.
Well, it's supposed to be, but it wasn't on the list that I got for what I can expect next week. But that just might mean it hasn't hit the UK. It might be out in the US.
But yeah, that's what I liked about this, because they give you like a 2-page for each other to kind of get you interested into reading it.
Yes, it's probably key to mention that you shouldn't pick this up on the belief that you will be seeing any Transformers or G.I. Joes or Enterprise crew members or Ghostbusters in the main story.
Yes.
That's, this is the prologue.
This is like the setup.
And this is the CBO story.
And they're going into the different universes. So
yes, it's a little bit overwrought as explanations go, but basically vampire zombie girl is absorbed by the zombies versus vampire zombies driven by a communal intelligence, like a hive mind. They're almost like insects. And she gets absorbed into this hive mind and tries to open the portal to release more of them. But whenever the CVO explode the portal, her consciousness is torn into four parts and sent to the four separate universes. So they have to recover her. I don't know if that means we can expect to see the CVO pop up in all four of the crossover miniseries, though.
Well,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because isn't that kind of like that Marvel Zombie story where you had like
Machine
Man traveling to different universes to stamp out the zombie plague or something? Remember they had a series?
They're going to get her back so that they can so that they can put her back together.
But they have this really cool panel where they blow her head off. That was cool.
Yeah, that was nasty.
That is so nasty. But her being an undead zombie vampire, whatever, it doesn't work. So, but that's a cool panel, that little panel right there. It's like, ooh, nasty. See, I like gory stuff. I apologize. So, but yeah, this has definitely got me interested into the crossovers. So.
This also takes a moment to remind us that these zombies can, in fact, zombify robots as well.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Oh, thanks for letting me know.
That's why Transformers will be in any way affected by this storyline. Because these zombies can infect robots as well.
They pretty much can infect anything.
Otherwise the crossover would be like, you know, a zombie shows up and Optimus steps on it, and that would be the end of the story.
The stomping. Yep.
Yeah, because they're showing like a little preview to Optimus. He looks really skinny to me.
Yeah, Nick Roach is going crazy with the distorted proportions in this. Wow,
Optimus went on a diet. and Bumblebee looks so teeny.
He does, too.
Dude, talking about like zombie Optimus, I watched Dark Awakening today. I don't know why. I just decided to want to watch it, so I did.
Hey, that's a good one. Yeah,
I have a bit of a longing to watch some season 3 at the minute. I think it's the impending masterpiece, Rodimus.
I think that's what it is for me, too.
That's true.
I'm sorry. Continue.
I've got to save my money. I can't get it yet. So, yeah, basically, it just sets up the scene for the crossovers. And the only I got Sector 7. That was the end of that series. And you know what? The ending was pretty good. It kind of leaves you with a little cliffhanger, but if you watch the movies, you kind of get it. It wraps up the story. Did you read this one, Chris?
Oh, yes. I've been a big proponent of Sector 7.
You know what? I don't think this comic has gotten enough justice, because I thought it was pretty good.
It was a good
short series.
I brought it up over in the IDW boards, and something somebody said to me and made a very good point was that I think it would probably have got a little bit more respect. Well, I mean, one thing, being part of the movieverse is hurting it, sadly. But I think being a human-centric series, it's an example of how to tell a human-centric Transformers story right. But at the same time, IDW isn't really presenting much in the way of an alternative to a human-centric Transformers story, because they're serving up something very, very similar over in the ongoing. And I think that people are just kind of burned out on the concept after the ongoing, even though Sector 7's the one that's doing it better, and that it was a good miniseries.
Yeah, well, like this last issue, you're not going to get a whole lot of robots. You get cleared up basically the only robot or transformer you see is Jetfire. It clears up how he decides to go from good to bad, I suppose. Or bad to good. And then it clears up how everyone was killed and how everyone survived and why Simmons' mom started a deli, pretty much. Because she didn't want him to know his past or anything like that. So, and I thought that was pretty cute at the end. So,
it's a bit of a tragic story.
It is. It really. There is some predictable stuff. I mean, you pretty much could figure out who the traitor is. And
not many options.
Yeah, but overall, I think when this comes out on trade, people should read it. It's really a good story.
To check it out. Yeah. I've been reviewing it in much more detail over on the Underbase, on the Moonbase too. So yeah. Go back and listen to those past episodes if you want a more detailed dissection of the whole series.
I'm not a big fan of the artwork, but it gets the job done. So
yeah, that issue was just fine. You know, I've said it before. I remember if I said it on here or not, but I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing a few more Transformers series that looked a bit more like Sector 7, where the artist is expected to be able to draw lots of different things instead of just pity robots, because a lot of modern Transformers artists get by on their ability to draw robots and really can't draw humans and backgrounds at all. So, you know, Sector 7 demanded a bit more of its artists. So even though they didn't perhaps have the technical, flashy, detailed mechanics of some of the big-name Transformers artists, they did an overall stronger job. Unfortunately, try telling that to some of the Transformers comic
book reading. If people like the story that was in the first movie, you know, the backstory of the great-grandfather, you know, going to the Arctic and stuff, they would like this series. It's really good. Oh. I thought it was very well done.
Definitely, yeah.
The conclusion, again, was kind of sad, but, you know, it was good. So
the conclusion I think we basically came to on the Underbase was that if you don't like the movies, it's not going to change your mind.
Well, yeah, it's based on the movies. Right. Yeah.
It's not going to be the story that suddenly convinces you that there's worth in the movie verse or that a human-centric Transformers story. You know, if you don't like those, you're not going to like this, even though this is the best example of how to tell one.
I don't generally pick up the movie comics. I don't think I've read any of the movie comics. So it's good to know that they're good. It's just that universe, I think I got enough of it in the movie, and I don't think I need more of it.
Well, if you were going to read one.
Reign of Starscream was probably my favorite movie verse one.
Is it good?
Reign of Starscream was really, really very well done.
Reign of Starscream and Defiance were probably the two best ones prior to this. But this is different this is good for a different reason than the steward.
And then I only got one last comic book here because there's a new comic that a new part of the series that started up. It's the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter. Again, it's based on kind of like the Dark Tower is based on previous stories, but this one's really cool because it's if you want to start off fresh with the comic, this is the one to start off. It's the Circus of the Dam, the Ingenuine. Basically, Anita has to fight off a new breed of vampire. If you're like, it's kind of like this vampire is immune to crosses and pretty much anything that you're known to kill vampires with. But she's also a secret agent, and so they're having to go to this hospital to protect the people there because they have a vampire locked up. But the vampire gets away, and all hell is breaking loose. But so it's just a bunch of this comic's basically setting up what's going on through the rest of the series. A lot of technical cop talk, I guess you could say. And at the very end, the vampire comes out and has her pinned, continued on to next week. So, like I said, it's just the start of it.
In the books yet where she starts having sex to get energy?
What?
It's been implied in the past comic books, so.
Because I know that the earlier stuff in the Anita Blake series is pretty straightforward Buffy-esque stuff. But as it goes on, she starts just humping everything that moves.
That sounds like Buffy.
I guess I should put that a little. This is not a comic book series. It even has a big mature stamp on the front. It is very graphic in both of violence, sex, language. It's not for younger readers for sure. So, yeah, it could be intense, and that's why I like it because it goes to the extremes. So a lot of gore again. I'm not into slash fiction, but I really like some gory stuff.
Okay.
So it's a good first starter.
All right. Awesome. And that's your stuff? Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so I'm going to go, and then McFeely, I'll let you go at the end. Because I like doing that now. I switch it. more out-of-the-box reading from JD? No. Surely not. Yes.
Crazy.
I know. This week, basically how this happened is my shop, they occasionally just kind of put stuff in your box like, hey, you might like this. And, you know, you don't have to buy it, but if you want to, you can. And this ended up in my box, and so I bought it. This is from Top Cow. This was the winner of the 2008 pilot season, which I'm not familiar with the contest, but I guess it's a contest where I think Velocity came out of that contest from the year before. That's another Top Cow that nobody's heard of, I'm guessing.
The girl that runs really fast?
I think so.
I don't know. I used to buy Top Cow.
I was hoping McFeely would save me on this.
Wait, what was it? Say it again. I didn't hear you.
It was the pilot season from Top Cow contest that they had done. This is the 2000.
They released like a one shot. This is the winner, I believe, isn't it?
Yes. Twilight Guardian.
Twilight Guardian. I only know this exists because one customer asked for it.
Wow. it's kind of interesting. This is the first in a four-part that they're releasing. And the previous comic, I haven't read it, or I'm currently actually skimming it, but the previous four-part is actually available online. I'm seeing it at Newsarama. So you can kind of go back and at least read that. But it looks like it sort of parallels some of the things that happens in this, so I don't think you have to read that to read this. It looks like it may provide some insight. Anyway, the story revolves around our hero, which I'll put in quotation marks, who is a vigilante, if you will. So patrols a 9-block area. It's a female, which is cool, very basic sort of superhero getup, black leotard-style pants, shoes, a blue hoodie, and a domino mask. So, but she also has, like, these, like, ninja climbing claws and a roll of quarters. And
so, wait, what?
Yeah. And a Wii glove for some reason.
She's got a roll of quarters as a weapon.
How yeah, cool. Yeah, you know, rolled up.
I thought she was taking a bus or something.
No. Like, she was,
like, you know, in a sock?
Yeah, like, but in her glove, I think. I think she... I think she uses them as
and across
you know,
the knuckles.
Weight.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Just imagine dropping it in a sock and swinging it around.
Yeah, you can do that. and she's got like all these maps and like location points and. Things.
She sounds like the girl Kick-Ass, actually.
I was gonna say she sounds like Kit Girl.
Yeah, like, one of the things.
Like Kick-Ass, but like the girl version of her.
Well, and at first read, like you get through the first page or two, and you're just like, okay, well that's kind of weird. And like she has a whole discussion about how it's important to find like your nemesis, and she hadn't really found her nemesis until she thinks recently there's this person that has been named in the media the Dusk Devil, and that they've been like attacking people, and they only come out after night. And, but one of the kind of cool things is that she reads comic books before she goes out on patrol. And so, like, it's really interesting because you basically get a panel or a full page of an issue of something that's, like, very pseudo, you know, like a DC or Marvel or something, like another, like, comic, you know, that sort of invokes a feeling of real comics, even though it's made up. So it's kind of Like, there's one in, like, the original title that's very much like a Fantastic Four style. But she always goes out, like, she always starts her patrol at midnight, and, you know, like, one of the things, she's out on patrol, and she notices this woman teaching a perverse, a pornographic phrase to, like, her parrot. Like an old woman. You know, she makes a note to, like, keep an eye on her in case, you know, she's doing something strange.
Oh my gosh, so funny.
But then, like, she's out on patrol, and then she eats something, and then she passes out for, like, several hours, and then wakes back up and goes home. And the next day, she goes to, like, goes to her ex-boyfriend's home, but she doesn't drive her car because she's afraid that he won't answer the door. And when she gets there, the police show up and say that he's missing. So that kind of weirds her out, and she goes looking for stuff. But there's just little things that start to happen that make you wonder if how all right things are. Like, for example, in one of the early pages, she's going through, like, part of her bookshelf, I guess, to get some of her equipment and stuff. And you see, like, a bottle of pills on the shelf, like a full bottle of pills. And then later, like, her mother calls and, you know, asks her about coming over that weekend or coming over for their Friday get-together. And she makes a point to mention that she needs to stop by the pharmacy on her way. And you basically start to get the impression, I mean, she even mentions later that she's supposed to be on this, like, anti-OCD, antidepressant, like, medication, and she's not taking her meds because they, you know, they don't make her sharp for, you know, being a vigilante. And she talks about how, you know, she's, you know, trying to, you know, it's like her vision of things. And then, like, really weird things, like, she takes food and stuff out with her on patrol, and she has, like, jerky. And she talks about how that she got the jerky from a deer she killed. So...
What?
Yeah. So, it's like...
That seems very random.
I think that the twist is going to be the jerky's the missing boyfriend.
Well,
oh my God.
That could be. I mean, anything is possible at this point. But
That would be awesome, though.
But the combination of just having these full pages that sort of invoke other comics, which is interesting, just to see her sort of the way she's viewing the world is very... I don't think I'm spoiling much to say that once you read it, you'll get the idea that she's not entirely stable. And so, yeah. So I'm interested. Like, I definitely want to read the rest of this.
Now, what is this called again?
It's called Twilight Guardian.
Oh, okay.
It's from Top Cow. And,
So I mean, when does she choose the werewolf or the vampire? Is that the next issue?
That's probably the next issue. Yeah, don't be fooled by the title. It has nothing to do with werewolves and vampires. It's Twilight. She patrols at night, and so. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like I said, it's just this. It's a very sort of very plausible look at someone that's trying to be a vigilante, but yet they may have some mental issues. And it's interesting because it's very much their perspective. It's all like their journal and her journal and stuff. So
I just like how you're keeping a PC.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to give away too much because I really would like people to read this. And it definitely leaves it. The next story looks to be interesting. It looks to be moving in an interesting direction because of what happens at the end of it. So I definitely think people should pick it up, and I'm going to try to make it a point to pick up the other four pieces or the other three pieces of this. But if you're looking for something off the beaten path
those are the kind of comics that I like. So
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think, you know, it's worth picking up, and definitely. One thing you can do is you can find that first issue from the pilot season at Twilight Guardian, and I'm going to read that. So if you kind of want a preview of what you're getting in that and this, then you can check that out as well and kind of get another piece of it. But anyway, psychologically, it looks to be going in really interesting places, so I definitely want to read that. So on to things I read more often, which is... Justice League Generation Lost. I wouldn't. It's not a. It's. I'll just go ahead and say up front that it's not a blow me away issue, even though there's some interesting things happening. When we last left, Power Girl showed up and started to beat the crap out of Captain Atom, or at least was going to be in the process of doing so. This issue opens up with a little bit of a flashback to the old JLI days, and she's trying to hang out with Captain Atom, and he's basically telling her she doesn't have to, and she basically has to spell out to him, it's like, look, I'm your friend, you know. And then you get the next page where she's trying to kill him. And it becomes apparent after a few panels that the things that Captain Atom is saying to her, she's not responding to, she's responding to something else. And that's because Maxwell Lord has her thinking that he's Superman and he's saying completely different stuff. So Captain Atom managed to get their shot off and call the rest of the JLI in. And of course, once they show up, she sees them as the rest of the Justice League. So she starts beating the crap out of them as well. And we go back to Max, who's been sort of experimenting on Blue Beetle's armor. So it looks like he's trying to extract some information technology out of it. And there's a really interesting piece of dialogue. It's something that they keep going back to with Max, which is that, and it's that idea of the way the sort of villain that Maxwell Lord is, in the sense that he's not the typical villain where you say he's like a bad guy and has bad intentions. He makes it very clear that, you know, he's whatever it is that he's doing, which they haven't fully revealed, it's for what he believes to be the greater good. So for one thing, like in here, he talks about, like, Jaime remembers who he is. And Max points out that it's because he's under extreme pain and duress. And it's also because there's no one else around that doesn't know who Max is, that the mind change effect is sort of it's like a herd mentality. So since most of the world doesn't remember who Max is, even when people do start to remember, once they're around other people that don't, then they forget too, because that's sort of like the collective consciousness. It's interesting. But so Jaime ends up remembering who he is, and Max even points out that if he were to bring 25 people into the room that didn't remember who he was, then Jaime would forget as well. So even though Jaime knows now, he may not know later. And Jaime starts to make the point, you know, starts to give him the line, you know, we're going to stop you. And Max quotes back, he's like, Jaime says, you're not going, we're going to stop you. And Max cuts him off, not going to get away with this. Right. And you're going to be looking at the inside of a jail cell, and good always triumphs over evil, which Jaime replies it does. And he's like, you know what, Jaime, I'll give you that one. Eventually, the bad guys always do go down. Time, the universe, our reality always seems to keep score. No matter how long a run the black hats might have, the good guys eventually knock them down at the mat. But that's the thing, Jaime. You keep thinking I'm the bad guy. So we have that moment again where, you know, whatever it is Max doing, he thinks he's doing it for the greater good. And he may be, but we just don't know that. So kind of interesting. And then he goes back to frying the hell out of him. So but most of this story involves the sort of battle between Power Girl and the rest of the JLI, which is mostly yawn-filled because they're trying not to hurt her, but I don't know why, because it's not like they could. And eventually they figure out that the best stuff in here, though, has to be some of the Rocket Red stuff. Just like little moments like they're trying to figure out, he's basically saying, you know, why doesn't Captain Atom fight back? You know, why doesn't he hurt her? And like, dude, he'd irradiate the whole place. You know, basically it would kill half of Tokyo. And he says, then how we stop her? We cannot keep fighting with Stall the Mate. And fires like, stale mate. But yeah. So, but anyway, they end up figuring out that she would be susceptible to sonic attacks, which Rocket Red just happens to have. So they end up invoking a huge amount of pain, and she sees through the illusion and rejoins the JLI.
Hooray!
Yay. So it's kind of, you know, I thought the middle part with Max was definitely the better part of the issue. You know,
I just feel that with this book, however 18 issues or whatever we're in now, I'm a little tired of Max Lord is mind controlling everybody to make them fight them as a hook. The plot hasn't evolved beyond that as of yet.
No, at least...
Yes, there was a sense of forward motion there when Captain Atom exploded a large part of a city. And Magog dying was awesome. But, you know, it's still just, oh, Max Lord, how soon before Power Girl forgets and exists again?
Well, and that can be the question, but... Yeah, and I think that what they've established, hopefully, to me, like with this, with the bit with Max, with the way the memory thing is working, that it provides an out. Like, it provides a potential to where more people could remember. So, I don't know. Hopefully, though, like you say, like these stories, yeah, I agree, where it's just mind controlling and then throwing stuff at them is going to be over.
They were going to go back and address that thing about nobody remembering Wonder Woman.
Well, and they may still. Didn't the new Wonder Woman issue come out this week? Was anything in that? I didn't read it, so I don't know.
I've got it. Haven't read it. Don't know if I'm going to read it.
So, I mean, there could still be stuff with that. I don't know. But, the whole thing, you got to remember, though, the whole thing with Magog was set up at the beginning of Brightest Day, and that just came. You know, that was just resolved a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. So,
can I ask two quick questions? One,
yes, ask the second one first and the first one second.
Oh shit! okay, so what? When Max came back, you know, everybody came back, and then like the white light told him to do something. Did we get a scene where we saw the white light tell Max to do something?
Yeah.
Yes.
Omega.
This was stop the war.
Stop the war before it starts.
Yeah, stop the war before it starts, which he did.
And okay, so he already succeeded in what he was supposed to do then.
Yes, his life has been returned.
So, okay, all right. Yeah, I forgot about that. So so then the second one is still nothing with Batman, you know, that whole thing at the end of that issue of Brightest Day where Batman's going to, confront Max or something?
There was one issue where Batman and Power Girl were talking, but then they forgot in the middle of that conversation. They forgot
about
Max.
Yeah, but was that Dick or Bruce?
Yeah, was
I think
Dick
it was supposed to be Dick.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Because then
they made a big deal in that issue of Brightest Night that Bruce.
Oh,
now
Brightest
knows.
Day. Yes.
Or Brightest Day.
Bruce,
yeah.
I think it's one of those things where it's just like all the strings have not come together yet.
Maybe that's like the end of this series. Like that's when like
you know what? Actually, just it turns out this week I didn't realize it, but actually these books are only 24 issues long.
Mm-hmm.
They're not 26. I thought they were 24.
Yeah, so we're getting pretty
close.
We only have 3 months left, right? Well, because this is all going to transition over into Flashpoint, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what transition as stop before it starts.
Stop before it starts, right. So, that's why I say I think we're about to see the strings start to pull together. The story's getting close to being ended. You got to think that, at two issue, an issue every 2 weeks or so, there are every two issues a month. We're going
to
be...
With only six more
quick.
To go.
Yeah, there's not a lot of story left, so...
Yeah.
These strings should be pulled together pretty quick. Half of the 12 have already had their lives returned, haven't they?
I guess, yeah.
I think so. Hawkman, Hawkgirl, Max, Professor Zoom...
Yep.
Someone in the chat, tell us who we've read.
Who hasn't? Osiris?
Captain Boomerang hasn't, has he?
Boomerang hasn't. Hawk hasn't.
No.
Martian Manhunter hasn't. Aquaman hasn't yet. No. That's nine. There are three more people. Who else got resurrected? Firestorm, he hasn't yet.
Firestorm hasn't yet.
Do you think we need to resurrect?
Jesus,
people?
Jade? Jade was resurrected, wasn't she?
Yeah, I have no idea if she's accomplished it or not, because she's the one character where it's actually happening in another comic.
Yeah, that's the one that's happening in...
Is that in Justice League of America? Okay, yeah. I've got that, and I haven't read it.
It's GLA, yeah.
I'll try to read that, and then I'll answer that question. It'll probably like, she bought like... She bought like milk or something at the grocery store, and she accomplished her task or something crazy
yeah.
like
that. Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah,
that can happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I think we're getting close, and I think that very quickly we'll see the strings pulled together on all the Brightest Day stuff. So at least I hope so. So anyway, that's me, McFeely. You may go.
Okay. Well, I'll start with Avengers then. Who read Avengers? Did anybody read regular type Avengers?
I did.
Regular type?
Regular Avengers, yep.
Regular adjective. That's good stuff. Well, this issue is two stories set side by side.
Way the misleading cover, though.
Oh, terribly so, yes.
Oh, I hate when they do that.
The Infinity Gauntlet is blasting Thor and the Red Hulk. Not so much. Yeah. Two stories. The flashback story showing how the Hood found out about the gems and got out of prison. And the story set in the present day in which all the other Avengers finally find out about the Illuminati. It's a real The Secret Is Out. And much like New Avengers this week, this is the other Bendis comic for this week that involves a lot of people standing around and having a conversation about the situation.
He likes that.
He does like that. But it's a good, it's another good conversational issue because it's a good subject to base a big extended conversation around, because I was rather looking forward to this issue because they've been sitting on the Illuminati for a long time, and even they haven't really factored into a plot in a while now, but this is just really proving that Iron Man and Captain America's issues aren't quite put to bed yet.
Yeah, I like Captain this America's. Issue. I thought I liked this one better than the last one.
I enjoyed the last one too, but like just definitely altogether, this story arc so far is so much better than the first time travel. Like these first three issues of this story arc are so much better than the first three issues of the time travel story arc.
Oh God, yes.
So it's like Apocalypse hasn't randomly dropped into this story at any point yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
So is
Captain America is.
Is this one that like someone like me could just pick up and read and know what's going on? It kind of sounds like it's confusing.
I would say it stands alone in isolation fairly well, but most of what is happening here is drawing upon things that have come before. So you wouldn't get the full benefit out of it if you just picked this one up, you know?
I had a hard time with, like, the first issue of this story because, like, I didn't know that was the Hood. I was supposed to know that that was the Hood, but because I don't know dick about the Hood, I didn't know that that was the Hood. So maybe it would be harder to get into this one. I don't know.
Well, I don't. I mean, I think perhaps when taken together as a trade paperback, it won't matter that you don't know it's the Hood for the first 22 pages, because this particular issue is spelling out that, hey, it's the Hood. He was in prison. And what happened was, this issue details it, is that also in prison with him is a member of the Inhumans who was left behind whenever the Inhumans left the Earth. And it's the Inhuman who was mentioned very briefly in passing in the last issue as being able to create the impenetrable shells that Black Bolt had sealed the Infinity Gem in. So unfortunately, he knew about the gem, he made the case for it, and he blabbed to the Hood, who then struck a deal with a guard to get out of prison. So it's just filling. It's just basically filling in how the Hood got out of the story, without having to worry about, spending the whole first issue dedicated to that. And obviously, that issue, last week's issue of Avengers Academy, fell after this, but before the rest of the story. And again, it is just an issue where everyone, Captain America and Iron Man, have a little bitch fit with one another, and Thor tries to moderate it.
Yeah.
And everyone wears cutesy little winter gear.
Yeah.
Standing on top of the Himalayas.
Spider-Man's got a webbed little kind of boggin on or something.
Yeah, a little
something. Yeah.
The best stuff in the issue, though, is Captain America and Iron Man going at it, because they both have complete points of view, but Captain America is looking at it from the wrong angle. Captain America's taking it. He takes it very personally in this issue, believes that he hasn't been told. It must have just been happening whenever he was in charge, and Iron Man tries to tell him it's been happening since the Kree-Skrull War, and Captain America just wanted to, like, oh, I don't care about that. You know, one minute it's like, I don't care about that. I care about now. You're slept with someone else.
Yeah, like, just get over it. Just yell Avengers Assemble and go kick the Hood's butt. You know?
I like Thor in this. Thor is very stoic in this. Captain America vows that after this is all over, Iron Man gets no more favors or special treatment and will pay for his sins. And there's just a silent panel, and Thor just bends down and says to Iron Man, prove him wrong.
Yeah, that was good.
Thor, it was very much caught in. Mummy and Daddy are fighting, and Thor's caught in the middle.
Yeah. And what about this scene at the end, though, with Madame Mask?
Yeah, the Hood heals Madame Mask's scars with the Infinity Gems that he's got.
Were they having like a relationship or something?
Oh, yes, they were shacked up in New Avengers. They've been shacked up for a while.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you should read New Avengers. Go back and pick up
the trade.
Yeah, they're like maybe, what, 5-6 trade paperbacks after Civil War. Read those. That's the good New Avengers. I always say New Avengers came into its own.
And see, the New Avengers I read was prior to Civil War. It was like Civil War that made me stop reading the book.
Yeah, see, Civil War is, I've always said it before, it came into its own after Civil War. It had ultimately failed to really make these characters believable as the Avengers, much as that sounds like a whiny nerd claim. You just have to read the comics and see that it didn't really work. But then whenever Civil War allowed them to drop the pretense of this cast of characters being the Avengers and instead turned them into a team of underground heroes on the run, it really... that became the book's identity, and it came into its own as that. And the whole hook, that was the whole hook of the series through until the very end. And the finale issue was based all around the fact that at last they're free to walk through the park in the daytime and all is well again.
So they're no longer the A-team.
Yeah, they're not anymore.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. No, so it's the second talkie issue from Bendis this week, but... It is a good one, and because it's for me anyway, it was a subject that I've been waiting for somebody to rumble for a while now, and I was like, oh, whenever the last issue ended with him, like, what are you doing? And it was like, oh, snap!
Well, and I think it's worth mentioning that the Avengers basically all agree that they're going to go find the other Infinity Gems before the Hood can get it, because they know that since he's got two, that's going to help him find the remaining gems.
That's as much forward motion as we get in this issue.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And they're like standing out in the daggum freezing snow while they're having this conversation.
Yeah, you could go somewhere a little warmer.
Get in the Quinjet. Go to like Miami or something and talk about this.
Otherwise, in Avengers news this week, Secret Avengers came out. And I think overall is a step up for the book again. I'm still having trouble with Secret Avengers. I'm still not 100% on board with this comic. It's very oscillating, and ultimately it's coming across like Steve Rogers and his Avenging Friends.
Yeah.
Because the supporting cast factors in so little. They could be anybody.
It's got Shang-Chi in it. Shang-Chi!
Yeah. Shang-Chi isn't one of the Secret Avengers that the book was promoted with as being part of the team. I don't object to Shang-Chi's presence as a guest character. It's when he takes up more of the spotlight than literally every other member of the Secret Avengers team except for Captain America that I start to take a bit of issue with it.
Who cares what Moon Knight says? I don't care if Moon Knight starts talking. You know, just have
Well, it's been a bit of a problem in evidence since the first story arc, where they sent Moon Knight and Valkyrie and Black Widow and Ant-Man and the Beast to Mars. You know, yeah, made sense for Nova to be shooting around up in space, but you know, and it's just carried on in this. And this is a very Steve Rogers-centric issue as well, but it pushes my continuity nerd buttons, because this issue is mainly about John Seedle, who we've seen floating around with the Shadow Council over the last couple of issues, and whose backstory is laid out clearly in this. He was a super soldier from World War One, who I believe appeared in only one Golden Age comic, but who Ed Brubaker, who is the writer of Secret Adventures, brought back into continuity in his recent mini, well, not recent, as a year or two ago now, his miniseries, The Marvels Project.
Don't they say they speculate that he was in the Civil War also or something?
Yes, they say that. They add that here as well, because his origins are unknown as well. He has he's got the super soldier powers, and he's got steel hard skin as well. And the Marvels project established that, like, the Germans had captured him during the First World War, and they'd studied him to try and gain the secrets of his biology. And one of the scientists who'd studied him was Professor Erskine, who ultimately defected and created the super soldier serum that created Captain America based on his studies of John Steele. And this issue adds in as well that another one of those scientists was the father of the man whose experiments turned Luke Cage into Power Man. So that was nice, with the steel hard skin and everything.
Yeah.
Then the rest of the issue is Shang-Chi trains Cap up for a fight with John Steele, and Cap fights John Steele, and Cap loses to John Steele.
Gets a butt kick.
Oh.
John Steele is badass, mother.
He is.
Shut your mouth. That's about it, basically. They meet on the previous issue. Steele captured Sharon Carter, and they agree to trade Sharon for Shang-Chi, who the organization, the Shadow Council, need as part of their deal with the High Dai, the cult that followed Shang-Chi's father, and they need Shang-Chi's blood to resurrect Shang-Chi's father. Shang-Chi's father, as we've said in previous episodes, is Fu Manchu, but they can't say that because they don't have the rights to Fu Manchu. That's why they can't reprint Master of Kung Fu.
Oh, that's...
Well, darn.
Cap gets his ass handed to him, and they get away. The switch is made. Sharon is saved, and Shang-Chi gets taken, and Cap gets his butt kicked into the bargain. But there's a nifty little twist at the end that I'm not going to blow, which makes me think that, hey, maybe he's realized the other members of the team could do something specific to their character types.
Yeah, I like that. I like how that ended. That was pretty cool.
I think this might have been... This is definitely the best issue of Secret Avengers since the one-shot Max Fury issue.
That was awesome. I love that issue.
It's not quite the best, because that was such a good issue. But yeah. It's the second best so far, and it gives me hope that, you know, maybe
I hope that the Max Fury guy, like, they like, he just like winds up being like a double agent, and they keep him, and he's like a Secret Avengers Nick Fury that's a robot. That'd be awesome.
That would be rather awesome.
I love that.
This is part 4 of 5, and again, nobody has done anything except Captain America and the Beast, who gets to sit in front of a screen and read off technical data.
Basically, everything's going to happen in the last 2 issues.
Yeah.
Well, it's just that we've gone so long in the book now without any of the other characters really mattering that I'm really wondering about my dedication to Secret Avengers. Honestly, it really, really needs to shape up. I already get Brubaker's Cap in trade. I don't really need this. You know, if you want to make a Steve Rogers... I mean, that's what this smacks of, really, is that Bucky's got the Cap book, and this is the Steve Rogers book, but they couldn't sell it on Steve's name. So it's Secret Avengers instead, but the team is incidental. I think the balance of Secret Avengers is off, and I'm seriously thinking about whether or not I should carry on reading it. And yet, for whatever reason, you know, online polls have people identifying it as their favorite. I don't really get it. I mean, it's not my favorite.
What polls are you reading?
I don't know, there's a couple polls here and there. It's just like, what's your favorite of the 4 Avengers books? Of course, Avengers Academy is coming in dead last, even though it's the best of the 4. But New Avengers, you know, still takes it, as far as I'm concerned. Of the 3, you know, the 3 real Avengers books, New Avengers is the one I vote for.
You know, real quick, I wanted to say that I like Deodato's art in this issue. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I generally enjoyed it. I do enjoy his work all the way through, you know. He has come a long way since the Deodato I knew from the 90s.
Yeah. I like the shots of like John Steele's like origin. I thought those were really cool looking.
Mm. Yeah. They were nice. I've never had a bad word to say about it. It's a very nice looking book, but yeah, it's just it doesn't seem to be pushing all my buttons otherwise. Last thing I'm going to talk about this week is Ultimate Spider-Man 152. Bendis issue, again, a lot of Bendis this week, with David LaFuente, the regular artist of Ultimate Spider-Man, drawing the present day sections, and Sarah Pacelli, the new artist of Ultimate Spider-Man, they seem to be sharing duties this way, telling the flashback portions of the issue in which the Black Cat and steals the Zodiac key, of all things, from Mysterio. So that's interesting. And then the present day section involves Iron Man, following up from the cliffhanger of last issue, in which Iron Man turns up to Peter Parker's house to take him for his first lesson in superheroing, which is what Peter has to do now in order to comply with S.H.I.E.L.D. and keep superheroing. But Aunt May immediately freaks out because, of course, this is appearing completely in public. All the people on the street are seeing him to say, and he's like, what does that say, you know? And he's like, this isn't what we agreed to. And Iron Man goes, thank you for the directions, kind citizen! Just so everybody can hear, and then shoots off. And again, actually, like, outside of the Black Cat stuff, another really talky issue from Bendis this week, in which Peter and Gwen spend like 4 or 5 pages getting their shit back together. And I'm glad that they got their shit back together, although Gwen wants them to break up because she just doesn't, it's not that she doesn't love him anymore, but it's just that she doesn't feel they can have a relationship in the situation they are currently in. And that sucks, frankly, because I like Gwen. And it's so horrible whenever she actually says it. Where is the quote? She tells him they're broken up, and she says, "When you start dating Mary Jane again, try not to do it in front of me."
Oh.
She doesn't actually mean it in a bad way. She's genuinely asking, just for right now, just let me adjust. When I start dating someone else, you can do whatever you want. I'll be able to handle it then. But right now, do me a favor and just keep it out of my nose, you know. Peter not taking this very well at all, because he doesn't want to be broken up at all. But it's this how horribly resigned Gwen is to the current to what there is between Peter and Mary Jane that we've been steadily, though we particularly saw in action during the Chameleon story arc of this book. One thing that's about the content of the issue, but I think one thing about this book that's kind of gotten on my nerves at the minute is the next issue. There are 2 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man next month, and the next issue is the first one that has been promoted as a prelude to the Death of Spider-Man, Death of Ultimate Spider-Man storyline. Now, it's 3 issues since this superhero school business got introduced, and there has yet to be any instance of superhero schooling.
Yeah.
Iron Man turned up at the end of last issue to take him for his first superhero schooling, and then in this issue it didn't happen. And then Spidey shot off to go on his first bit of superhero schooling.
Doesn't the Death of Superman, doesn't that come out next month?
It is when they have started promoting it for, but the first things that are happening are the even though all the ads say like February, what's actually happening is 3 prelude issues first. Now, I'm assuming then that the prelude issues are 1 issue with Cap, 1 issue with Iron Man, and 1 issue with Thor, going through the superhero student stuff, but I just feel like with another story on the cusp of beginning that they have heavily hyped, that this other story that they introduced in the same month as the hype kicking off doesn't really seem to have got itself in gear. The promotion versus the forward motion of the comics seem to be slightly at odds with one another. But outside of that, it's a third rather talky issue from Bendis this week in which the plot doesn't move forward overly significantly, but remains entertaining because of the character work done. And, you know, I was looking forward to seeing what happened with Gwen and Peter, even if I'm not overly happy with the resolution because I don't want the characters to break up. So
now, am I crazy? I want to ask a quick question because is this the Gwen Stacy that's still like a Carnage clone?
Yeah,
something?
That's her.
They just don't go back to that anymore, do they? Just don't even reference that.
No, they really
that.
Don't. There's a clone of Gwen that was created from the Carnage experiments.
We're just meant to forget that she died altogether, aren't we?
I would rather.
Yeah.
I like the character. I would rather just... It's like I would rather forget that Aunt May didn't die. She was actually just replaced with a genetically altered actress. I would rather forget that shit.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Zodiac key thing going on just with the Black Cat is just rather interesting as well, because you don't see these. Mysterio is claiming that the Zodiac key is a talisman that actually let the Kingpin keep his power. This is why the Kingpin was as successful as he was, and how he held his position of power in the world of crime. So that's an unusual twist. And Sarah Pacelli is doing some very nice art on the Black Cat as well. So, I'm interested to see where the death story goes, but I think it becomes pretty obvious that the issues that are going to be labeled as a prelude to the death of Spider-Man probably aren't going to have much to do with it, since it's still this superhero school story and not that. And, that's about me for this week. I also read Ultimate Doom, in which characters stand around talking about the threat of maybe doing something. And X-Men Forever 2, number 16, which was the last issue of X-Men Forever, which I haven't talked about in a while, but which we may recall was the series which posed the question, what if Chris Claremont had continued to write the X-Men after he left the book in 1991? And they didn't really answer it, because there's no way any of this stuff would have actually happened back 1991. It doesn't quite get the chance to, it's obviously been cancelled before any ending was in sight, because it doesn't get the chance to wrap up all its plot threads. In fact, you know, he deliberately throws in a few scenes of plot threads that don't get wrapped up. Mr. Sinister abducting Nathan Summers, stuff like that. But it does wrap up the main plot that's been running through this story, like with the clone of Storm and the evil version of Storm wrapping up that storyline, and the Ghost Panther and Genosha and all of this stuff. Now that it's over, you know, it's the only X book I read, and I have enjoyed X-Men Forever a lot. So
are they replacing that with the new Age of X then? Is that what they're trying to replace?
That's a crossover between X-Men Legacy and New Mutants. So it's just a 6-part story.
Okay.
X-Men Forever. You think they'll let Claremont come in and do like maybe like a mini series or something to kind of resolve it a little bit better? Probably not.
I would say if they were going to let him resolve it, they would probably just have given him an extra couple of issues to X-Men Forever. And, that would have been it, really. Cassius in the chat there.
He'll probably start writing like another comic, and then he'll just like resolve it with the other comic. Like he'll start writing like Wolverine or something. And just start with...
so Cassius, what are they going to replace it with then?
Oh, they may not replace it with anything.
Hmm.
Cassius in the chat there has asked what was going on with Storm. In summation, the evil Storm who killed Wolverine was a clone created from the the genetic science of Genosha, while the little Storm was Storm reduced to childhood as she was in a story in 1989, but. She was also split from her true self, the true soul and essence of Storm, who became a living energy being, which was what was inhabiting the Ghost Panther body, the Ghost Panther armor. And Doctor Strange hoodooed them back together, and then they kicked the evil Storm clone's ass, and Storm took over as Queen of Genosha. So good for her. No, Queen of Wakanda.
Everybody ate pie.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because it was very specifically based on and around the events of a 1989, 1990-ish X-Men story in which the X-Men were duking it out in Genosha, in which the little Storm clone, the little young Storm, Little Rose, she was called, which back in the 80s was Storm reduced to childhood. There was a fight in Genosha. She got caught in the energy backlash from some attack or other, I forget what. And there was an explosion, and she appeared to be restored.
But this is written off as a fake out on the part of the Gene-Engineer in Genosha. So whenever there's the Flash and the real Storm appears to be recreated, that's actually the evil clone Storm taking her place while they try to fix the other Storm in there. So I haven't read that story yet, the original story, because they haven't published an essential of it. One more essential X-Men volume will complete Claremont's original run on the title. So please bring that out, Marvel.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that was me this week.
Okay.
And we're running on a bit here, so let's get to it.
All right. So.
Here's the rant everyone's been waiting for.
Yeah. Here we go. So, obviously, as we've said, we're going to talk about Fantastic Four. I want to go back a little bit just so we can get the full picture of what happened on Tuesday. Because I think that's the only way to really open this discussion up is to talk about what happened on Tuesday morning and why I am so pissed off.
Yeah.
So how long ago did they actually announce that a member of the Fantastic Four was dying? Almost a year ago?
Maybe not a full year ago. Certainly a good 7 or 8 months it must have been.
Been several months. Okay, so they announced that. We knew the story was going to be building to that point, to three, and kind of the point that we're at. So we knew someone was going to die. We just didn't know who. And Marvel decided to make a big deal out of we don't know who. So that became part of that driving story. Now, it was announced, 2-3 months ago that it was going to be bag-sealed?
Mm-hmm. Sealed in a black bag, so you wouldn't be able to flip through it in the shop.
Yeah, so made a big deal about that as well.
You had to buy it to read it.
Yep, gonna have to buy it to read it, not gonna be able to thumb it on the shelf, gonna try to keep those spoilers to a minimum.
Then it was announced. If you can't find it on the shelf.
Yeah. So, and pretty much, if you didn't pre-order it, it wasn't gonna be there.
Yeah, it's because they didn't print any extras.
Yes, that was it. So, about, 2 weeks ago?
Didn't have to worry about that.
Well, so about 3 weeks ago, they announced...
The idea was that retailers would order large quantities for their shelves. That was just ordered their usual small amount and they had extra people coming in asking after it, they wouldn't be able to order extras because the print one was literally only going to be enough to fill the initial orders for the comic.
But and, they are reprinting it.
Have tons
make a second printing of it, yeah.
Well, they've already said they're doing a second printing. They've already announced, I think, who's doing the cover. I can't remember.
Well, there Joe you go.
Quesada is doing the cover. Oh, that's what's happening. Yeah.
So, what was it, a couple weeks ago that they announced there? 2 weeks ago, it really wasn't that long
ago.
Not very
long
at
all.
That it was going to be coming out on Tuesday morning. So, comics
a day early.
Day early. Now, comics typically come out on Wednesday, but because of the improved shipping schedule that they changed a couple months ago, they're going to be able to allow retailers to release it on Tuesday morning. So, here's the grand plan, everybody. Here's where we were at. Again, up to Tuesday morning, Marvel's plan was to put it in a sealed bag and release it a day early so that only the nerdiest of the nerdy people that knew the comic was coming out was going to be able to go to the shop on Tuesday and pick up the comic. Now, beautiful day to do it. Why? Because the Oscar announcements were that day. So even if there was some sort of news that would hit, it would probably be trying to hit about the same time as the Oscar announcements, which means it would be completely buried and no one would even know. Right? Brilliant idea. I mean, this is like, we were not a week, if not 2 weeks ago on this show, we were praising Marvel, saying Marvel's amazing. They really care about us. They love us and they want to pet us because they're trying to keep us from getting spoiled. They don't want this information to get out. They want it to be a surprise when you pick it up and read it.
And they're the
JD Smash.
And then
Hold on.
What?
No, you understand. Everybody hold back. He's about to blow.
Here we go. Then Tuesday morning happens. Okay? Yeah. Now, there's a little bit of conflicting as to whether, like, the AP broke it first. I think the AP broke it a little bit sooner, but not far behind was another media outlet. Another media press release, which I'll get to in a second. But here's what happened to me, though. So for those of you that don't follow me on Twitter, here's what happened to me on Tuesday morning. I get up, stupid me. I think, you know what? It's Tuesday morning. The day the comic comes out, nobody's going to be, you know, paying attention to this. I can probably check my Twitter in the morning, and then I wouldn't be able to check it all the way through work, but that's cool. And then I go after work and go pick it up, and then I'd be awesome, and everything would be fine, and I could read my comic, and I would be happy. first thing on my Twitter is a dude that doesn't even follow comic books. All right? And here's your spoiler point, because I got to tell you what he said. It said, R.I.P. Johnny Storm.
Uh-huh.
And then the link to the story. I was stunned. It's 5:30 Central Time. 5:30. Like, the shops aren't even going to open. I'm like, how did he know this? And I look at the story. I'm like, where is this coming from? And I'm pissed because I'm like, damn it. Months I waited. Patient. I was excited. So I take my shower. I come in. I pull up the story. I like do the search. And you know what pops up? A story talking about the Fantastic Four and the death in the Fantastic Four. First paragraph is who died. When you pull up the article, it pulls up an image of the Fantastic Four, the one that's been in the comic for the last couple months with the little circles, and the circle with Johnny Storm is missing. So before, and then below that is spoilers. So even if you click the link before you got to the point that said spoilers, you're already spoiled.
Now, was that the Marvel homepage?
Yes!
The Marvel homepage?
Yes! That was on Marvel's page at 7:30 in the morning on Tuesday morning before any of the shops had opened. They put out the story themselves, breaking
awesome.
Who died.
They just kind of had to do it after the Associated Press released the news.
They didn't have to. And who would have
No,
because
all of the there all the links, you know, pointing to Marvel's website on the new, you know, to not have some kind of reaction to it, there's just no sense there. But there is it's still just an appalling situation. You know, it's like Tom Brevoort did his first column sans Axel Alonso for CBR this week, and he's very apologetic because I imagine he wasn't terribly best pleased about it either. But, you know, it's like, yeah, it's not like we went to them and said, will you please run a story that gets us shouted at or whatever. But it's like, you know, maybe just don't tell them until Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the comic shops aren't going to thank you for forcing a load of extra people in on Tuesday when there's no new stock to sell them.
Yeah.
You know, if people saw the news on Tuesday morning and rushed to their shop to get the issue, they certainly didn't buy any other new material that was on the shelf because it wasn't on the shelf. Nothing else was sold new. If you had just waited until Wednesday, the normal day of release, there wouldn't have been any problems. Now, me, I got up in the morning and I chose instead to read Captain America the Bloodstone Hunt and then go out to get my comics. I didn't touch a computer and I didn't touch a computer until about 5 p.m.
Yeah,
so I didn't look at the computer. I didn't watch the news. I was devoid of everything that day, just to be on the safe side.
You avoided the spoilers too, then?
I did not get spoiled. No, I read it. That's all I found out.
I avoided it for a good day. And the thing that ticks me off is,
weren't even trying to avoid it, were you?
No, I was.
JD, she wasn't even trying.
Hey,
No, because I knew the people that were going to spoil it, so I skipped their Twitters and stuff. Because I was actually going to go into the comic book store and get it, whatever. And it was one of my favorite authors actually spoiled it for me that I follow on Twitter. And I'm just like, you, an author, should know better about spoilers.
Yeah, that's the thing. But that's what happened. Like, this whole, like, media frenzy all of a sudden got stirred up at the last minute. I mean, for the last few months, most of the media could have given two shits about this. Mm-hmm. And then for some reason, they made this big deal about who it was going to be and whatever.
Well, I mean, they've been making a big deal about comic book deaths in the media since Captain America, really. Captain America and Batman got some media attention. But, you know, that wasn't a surprise thing.
No. No, and it's just
Batman didn't even die in the comic that they said Batman was gonna die in.
No, but I was just in general, I was just disappointed. I mean, yes, I could have not pulled up Twitter that morning.
There is some blame to be apportioned on both sides of your scenario.
I'll take my part that I should have realized that somebody was bound to have been able to spoil it by 5:30 on Tuesday morning. Okay. But seriously, as far as the media blitz that hit after that and all the way up, basically until the Oscar news hit, that just afforded it way too much time to get penetration, and then it was way out there by the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. So anyway, then we'll get to the comic. Yeah, that's a whole. That's a whole.
Was it worth the hype?
Whole other thing. Let's talk about it, and we'll see what we think. Because my opinions may not be others. Although Brian and I did talk about it, and we sort of had the same opinions. So, so let's see. So.
When we left our heroes.
Go ahead, McFeely. I'm going to let you do this, buddy.
Yeah, this is a McFeely description.
This
right?
is a full McFeely review. Yeah. You go for
Meanwhile,
it, man. I'll just throw in
of
stuff.
Justice.
Yeah.
When we last left our heroes, Sue was trapped in Atlantis trying to broker a treaty between the kings of old Atlantis and Namor, who claimed that they were going to use her as a sacrificial pawn because they were evil. Reed Richards was at the far end of the galaxy trying to save the entire population of New World before a pissed-off Galactus ate it to avert the future in which they would kill him and send his own corpse back in time. And in the Baxter building, a powerless Thing and Johnny try to hold back the forefront of a new annihilation wave that's... that is quite correct, actually, was what I was saying. The forces of the anti-priest from the cult from the other side of Zero invaded the Baxter building and opened the portal to the negative zone, allowing the vanguard of a second annihilation wave to come pouring through, and a powerless Thing in Human Torch have to protect the kids of the Future Foundation from the invading bug monsters. Now, there's something a tad... what's the word? Oh, I can't think of the right word. Teasing, maybe? Or taunting, even, maybe would be the word. A large part of the issue is a guess who. You know, we keep jumping from scene to scene, and these things keep happening, and it's like, oh, is this it? No.
Yes.
But obviously, the actual thing itself doesn't come until the very end. And it reaches a point, maybe about literally halfway through the issue, when you can see that there is no other outcome that is going to happen here. You know, the death is pretty much written in stone, maybe about halfway through the issue. There's no other outcome to the whole thing. But there are some really great moments along the way here. You know, everyone in the Baxter building is freaking out, and Leech starts just screaming, "Punch! Punch! Punch!" And
he's like, "I love that."
And then Valeria just clubs him on the back of the head and knocks him out. But it turns out that's what he wanted them to do, because holy damn, Franklin's got his powers back, and Leech has been living with the Fantastic Four because he's been suppressing them for however long.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Yes.
And Johnny and Franklin just fries them all. When Franklin gets his powers back, that is never good news.
Yeah.
And then, I think there was just sort of a great moment in each of the scenarios, and then we came around to the death, you know. It's like the old kings of Atlantis say, we are not what we once were, we're not what Namor thinks we are, so, you know, you're not going to be sacrificed, Sue. And it's like, the king, Namor killed the king in the previous issue, and his throne should pass down to his children. But his children are too young, and so the crown passes to the steward of the children. And that's Sue. Hey, Sue's suddenly Queen of Atlantis. That's awesome.
Yes.
Hey. Damn.
I love the interaction between her and Namor, though.
Yes.
That's in a couple of pages, but that is just great. I'll get to that when we come to that. But like, yeah. Then, on New World, it turns out, hey, everybody that's on New World is just completely devoid of sentience and just meat puppets. The entire consciousness of everybody that lived on the planet has been transferred into the mind of Natalie X, who was one of Miller's Fantastic Force characters, if I remember correctly. She's literally holding the consciousness of the entire world in her giant swollen brain, so all they have to do is teleport her off the planet in order to save it. But hey, turns out Galactus is not even going to eat this planet. He's just going to destroy it, so there's no meticulous energy conversion here. He's just going to blow this shit up, so they've only got minutes.
So he's just pissed off, isn't he?
Galactus, it takes a lot to piss Galactus off.
Then back with the kids in the Future Foundation, they step through the, having beaten the bugs, they step through the portal to try and close it from the other side. But there's it is random. Reed has them locked out of the system. They can't break in to shut it down. So they sit and come up with as many theories as possible. And it's concluded that someone is going to have to stay behind on the other side of the portal to detonate them. They can't close the portal like with the controls, so they're going to have to blow the whole array up to shut it. And that's going to require somebody staying behind on the other side. So that's whenever it starts to become apparent that that is really where the death is going to come in. Then we jump back to Atlantis. There is just this brilliant scene with Namor and Sue, where Namor is just really about to take the back of his hand to Sue because she won't listen to him, and she just forms an invisible big spiked gauntlet around her arm and just backhands the guy across.
Awesome. It's like don't touch me, bitch.
I'm done asking nicely, and Namor's all like, you dare! And Sue, you're damn right I dare! Mr. These are my people now. I rule here. I am a queen that bows to no king. And Namor just glares at her, and then he's like, God, you are magnificent. Over the next panel is just Sue silently rolling her eyes so hard.
Every
writer loves to come back to the old Sue Reed Namor triangle, but like, Namor is just a dog with a bone. Sue is so far beyond Namor these days. I just love this brilliant. It's just this completely silent rolling of this. Jesus Christ. I can get nothing done with you around here.
Awesome.
Really enjoyed that scene. And then, the Maestro pops up over on New World to harass Reed and Co. And then it's like, oh God, no, is this it? Oh, wait, no, okay, they're just not going to fight. You can come through the portal too. And then Galactus destroys New World as they safely get through the portal. So they're okay. And then we get our extended second half of the issue in which Ben is going to stay behind, and then Johnny shoves him through the portal, and Johnny decides to stay behind and detonate the explosives that they have set up as the annihilation wave bears down on him. And of course, Zod's Law, as soon as Ben is through the portal, the formula starts to wear off and he transforms back into the thing.
Yeah, I know that's so been done to death, but yeah. I still love it. That panel, it works so well. Him banging on the door as he changes. Yeah.
It's like, it might have turned out differently if he could have been on the other side. Mm-hmm. Then there's the panel where Johnny just reaches out and says, you don't wish it any more than I do. And that panel, we've actually seen that panel before. That was foreshadowed whenever back when in the two-part story where adult Franklin came jumping back in time. We saw the panel of Val making the deal with Doom. We didn't see who she was talking to, but it says, do we have a deal? There's the panel of Johnny reaching his palm out and saying, you don't wish it any more than I do. And one panel we haven't seen yet, where Dr. Doom says, here, I can build. So that's still to come. And then, basically Johnny turns on the oncoming wave. 1,000,000,000 to 1. You think I'm afraid of that? You think I'm afraid of that? Flip on! And then the thing can only watch through the collapsing doorway.
And the teardrop from Ben. Oh, my God.
As Johnny is just consumed by the wave. And, of course, I think everybody had the same reaction, which is like, oh, he didn't see him die, so he's pretty much alive. But, of course, we have to remember that there's a giant nuclear explosion goes off a second later.
Yes.
And it just ends with Val and Franklin crying up against the thing as they lean against the shop door, and the title of the issue is revealed, The Last Stand of Johnny Storm.
Yeah.
So, do you honestly think he's going to be dead that long, though?
No, he's going to be back in about a year.
Because, hey, wait a minute. Hey, this is 587. The next issue is 588 plus 12. Hey, that's 600.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next issue is advertised as the final issue of Fantastic Four. And then we've got this series FF starting the month after that. We don't know if it's actually going to be called FF or it will have a longer title that we just don't know the full name of yet. But pretty much everybody just assumes that is going to run for 12 issues, and then the 12th issue will be Fantastic Four 600, and Johnny will probably be back. But then, to be fair, I said that about Batman, and he didn't come back for issue 700. They just told a time travel story.
I think that was a scheduling issue, though. I mean, could that argument have been made that the production got delayed?
When the thing came. Well, not really, because it was issues 700, 1, 2, and 3 were key chapters in revealing the hyperadapter and key points in what then happened in Batman and Robin and the return of Bruce Wayne. So the story points had to be laid yet. They hadn't happened yet. So I suppose it's possible he might not come back for 600, but this year is the Fantastic Four's 50th anniversary. So we'll see what happens. But there's definite shit. Oh, yes, well, absolutely. I don't think anybody really does this. I mean, for goodness sake, they don't even get a body, you know, in comics. I mean, he's probably just going to be sitting there waiting for them when they get the portal open again in a year's time.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I want to mention is what Val says. I mean, in the panel, she says, Dad will have a back door built in. We'll be back. Is she talking about, like, some sort of a time travel to the point to rescue him or something? You think that's how they're going to bring him back?
Well, I think she just means a back door into the system that will actually allow them to get the door back open.
Yeah.
Well, I just figured that maybe she meant, like, well, we prepared for this. We knew somebody was – we kind of knew this was going to happen. You kind of going back to the whole time travel of, you know – older Franklin and all that. So I'm thinking that I'm seeing something down the road. We just don't have enough information yet.
Well, I mean, if there's one thing to take away from this issue, it is absolutely that this is not like Morrison killing Batman. I don't want to draw too many parallels between Morrison and Hickman, but they're definitely there to be drawn. Like Morrison killing Batman, this is not some stunt that has been forced on, like, editorially or something like that. This is something Hickman was going to do from the outset, and this is just the next chapter in whatever ongoing story he is telling. Because, you know, there's at least a year's more worth of Hickman stuff, up to 600 to come. And this is, particularly that time travel Flash panel I was just talking about from a good 6 months ago, foreshadowed this and stuff beyond this. These are all just chapters in a larger... I mean, we haven't even had the War of Four Cities yet, which has been hinted at since about after four issues of Hickman starting his run. This is all just tiles in the mosaic, and I'm very much excited to see where the rest of it all goes.
Well, if I'm honest,
I was just a little disappointed that it was Johnny, because so many people had anticipated that it would be Johnny, because he is the one member of the Fantastic Four who has never died or had a death fake out before.
Well, I hate to say, and that also, I was right. For the most of this run, I mean, he's not really been doing a lot. I mean, like, and we mentioned a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this being our prediction, you know. You even said it about another comic a couple months ago, which was that, you know, typically it's the character that's sort of been hanging out but not really doing anything. And, well,
That was probably Avengers Academy.
Yeah, I think it was. But, I mean, that's, you know, yeah. But, I mean.
But I was reading an interview with Hickman, and his approach to it has been that for a large part of his history, Johnny has just kind of been the supporting character, the supporting member of the cast.
Yeah, he's Sue's brother. The beginning of the Fantastic Four, he was just along for the ride.
That
was the origin of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Johnny Storm was just along for the ride. That's it, exactly. And that is the theme that, like, the basic hook for the character that Hickman decided to put into play for his run in Fantastic Four. And the idea is that that character has been removed from play with this action, that the supporting character is gone now, and that they don't have that jokey, friendly, lighthearted supporting role to the team anymore with this action.
So who do you think they're going to replace him with?
Oh, probably She-Hulk. Please, She-Hulk. No.
Well, I mean, yes. I think that's the idea, though, is that they're not going to replace him.
Yeah,
I think that's part of the story, is that
the fact that we don't still have a Fantastic Four, we have FF instead, and the fact that hyped this as three seems to indicate that this is not Sue gets pregnant, so Crystal takes up her place on the team. It's not one of those stories. This is not going to bring in a fourth member for a year or something like that. This is a different kind of death story, and that's the issue.
Well, I want to wrap up. I mean, as far as, I don't know, my thing on the issue is, of course, I was spoiled on it, so I came into it knowing at least where it was going to end up, and I think if I hadn't been spoiled, it would be good. I mean, I think we pretty much mentioned the highlights of this of the issue, but having been spoiled, it wasn't that great.
I agree.
Well, yeah, if you knew what was going to happen, because the whole issue is a build to who it is. You know, it is a guess who.
But
and
even
if that's spoiled for you.
But even that, though, I mean, like you said, I mean, halfway through, it becomes pretty apparent. Mm-hmm. As soon as you get to that point where you know someone's got to stay on the other side of the portal, you know, I mean, there's not much question who it's going to be.
But does that make it a bad issue that all signs pointed to him? I mean,
well, I'm not
would it be better if, I don't know, like Herbie showed up and Herbie's the one that stays behind or something?
No, I mean, I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just saying it wasn't.
That's a Shyamalan twist right there, isn't it?
I'm just saying it wasn't bad. It's not that it's bad. It just wasn't great. It wasn't what
I
expected out of it.
The question becomes, like, I think the element of mystery, that was probably an editorial thing.
Yes, and see, that's my yes. Thank you.
Imagine this as some great big mystery twist that would have a excuse me. That would have a big countdown. Excuse me. That would have a big. You would have a big countdown timer across the last 4 months worth of comics. I think this was just something he was going to do.
And
marketing and editorial turned it into a bit more of a mystery than the story ultimately served it to be.
And
so
I
if we hadn't had the big marketing thing, do you think it would have been you would have liked it better then?
Well, you probably wouldn't have been spoiled.
It probably wouldn't. Probably wouldn't.
Well,
be spoiled.
You would have been spoiled.
And,
yeah.
But see, then you have. I think the problem is that you have this issue and the last, in which I felt like it was all about, like, the last issue was all about putting the pawns into place, knowing that one of them is going to die. This issue was about moving the pawns into position so that one of them dies. So, and trying to keep that as a secret. Whereas if you know that's what's going to happen, you can write the story and structure it in a different way. I'm going to make an argument here, and I may be wrong. I'll let you debate it. But kind of thinking back through the other trade, you know, thinking back through having read, you know, Hickman's run, I wouldn't say that any of those ended on a point where it was like a point of like high resolution or high climax or high emotion. But the moments before that, all of those moments have been interesting. So I'm wondering if with Hickman the journey is better than the destination, if that makes sense. Not to say that it's bad, but just to say that...
Well, ultimately, I can't say as how I feel we have truly reached the destination of what it is Hickman is doing with his run.
I'm saying like in the pieces, like looking at the pieces themselves. Because obviously these are pieces of a larger picture, like you said, it's a pieces of the mosaic. But if you're looking at that individual piece, does it seem like or no that the, like I said, the journey, like the end point doesn't seem to be like that moment where you hit that end and then you're like, oh, I get it all, and then it's there. You know, more about that middle part of the journey. I mean, you think about like the Brotherhood of Reeds or whatever it was called, that middle piece where you had, you know, all of the Reeds and the reveal that, you know, Reed was, you know, this Earth's Reed is different from the others, and that was, you know, like that was the really interesting piece. It didn't matter so much what was the end of that? What ultimately the Franklin thing, and they all, I don't know. It's just, I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know. Like I said, you can debate that, but.
Well, I'm just finding it as sort of inescapable in drawing Morrison parallels, but that's because my eyes were really just open to the value of that kind of storytelling whenever Morrison's Batman epoch reached its end. And I've said it before, like, I just suddenly got it. And everything that had come before suddenly was just illuminated and just made a twisted kind of sense all at once, and I got what he was doing. And this is the only way I can see what Hickman is doing with the Fantastic Four. It's certainly not I feel that the individual parts are more comprehensible than anything Morrison was doing with Batman.
Yeah, and so maybe that'll be the thing. Maybe once the whole thing is set up, we'll see it. But and that's why I'm saying, like, I was a little, I don't know, I was expecting a big smack in the face, even though I knew who it was. You know, I was still expecting something more, and I didn't get that. Which, again, doesn't mean it was bad. It just wasn't,
Well, I think your position of having been spoiled was definitely, it's definitely going to shape.
Oh, I know that. Absolutely.
Of the way that the story is told. And, you know, Brian, you say Brian agreed with you, and he was spoiled on it as well.
So. Exactly. And that's why I say I kind of bring that up, too, because I know you all weren't. So I wanted to see.
Yeah, we weren't. And I just was like, you know, I was, no, I can't say I felt let down by the issue at all, you know, although, you know, just simply by the fact of knowing who it was, thinking that I knew who it was halfway through made me think that there might be some kind of twist to it at the very end. But no, it was Johnny. So there was that element to it. But then, of course, you know, you have to wonder how much exactly does marketing and editorial play into the way the story has been presented to us.
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals where Hickman came in and said, I got this great idea for Fantastic Four, and, you know, in the middle point, I have to kill off Johnny, and then we'll get into the stuff, and like, oh, that's great, we should make it a secret, like, who of the Fantastic Four was I? Like, well, I don't really think that's necessary. I think we could just tell the story. No, it'll be amazing. We'll do a whole media blitz. It'll be great. Like,
I can imagine.
No, really.
Burger in hand, Joker's meaty jowls smacking with excitement, like, at the prospect.
Yes, yeah, like, oh, it would be amazing. I could do a cover for the second issue.
I want to come in and write an issue. One moment in FF time.
Have they leaked out images to the cover for the next issue at all?
Have, yes, they have.
Oh, the, I haven't seen it. Does it give any hint of them mourning him or something like that?
Yeah, well, the next issue, like, Johnny's missing from the little circles on the cover of the issue, and the preview page is, it seems to be about, what's all mourning, really. Spider-Man is trying to comfort Franklin, you know, because the Human Torch was his best friend.
So they all stand around at the gravesite and retell stories that didn't
Johnny left the beer.
You know, the Human Torch is really a better man than Ben Grimm.
You know, one time I was drinking and Johnny helped me stop drinking. Yeah.
You know, like the Human Torch and the Rogue had a special relationship.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
The Century was a bastard.
Yes, he was. I'm glad he's dead.
On a broader level, comic book death was the subject of discussion on one of the earliest Fanboy versus Sissies, as I recall. And a lot of people, I mean, there's a reaction to this issue that's really chafing my nipples, which is the way that angry internet man children who don't even read the fucking comic are taking every opportunity to chirp up and go, oh, it's not like it'll matter, he'll be back in a year anyway. And he will, yeah. And, oh, why do they keep killing characters in forever? It doesn't, no impact anymore. That's the point. Writers know this now. Captain America's death, Batman's death, the big media comic book deaths of the last couple of years. These have been written with that very principle in mind. The death is part of a larger story that the author is telling. The return is the return is written into the death and will be the resolution of a long game storyline. It allows in-fiction characters to have genuine emotional reaction to the death of a character if they'll be back with the return scripted in as the work of the same author and not somebody else coming in to cheaply undo the work of somebody else because they want that character to be alive again. The writer is writing the characters genuinely reacting and will be able to follow that up with the real reactions to the undoing of the storyline. It allows us to have good stories where characters are human and have human emotions without cheapening the nature of the storyline retroactively because it's part of the epoch, the long game, the ring cycle of the story that they're telling. So please shut the fuck up with your mindless internet commenting.
Well, and I think that's the difference.
McFeely, tell us how you really feel.
Well, no, I mean, and I agree with you, though, McFeely.
I second that comment.
I think that there's a difference between a situation in which a comic book character's death was written, either. I mean, a good example still is like Death of Superman. Yeah, Superman died, but the intention that whole time was to bring him back.
Yeah. Admittedly, that was the first time that the public at large had a taste of comic book death. They mm-hmm. didn't know at the time. I mean, ordinary comic book readers would have grasped at the time. And then that was a long game. That wasn't just a long game storyline. That was just like 18 months of the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just like
because...
one thing after the other. That wasn't like it diverged off to be about Superboy becoming the new Superman or something. The way
right.
It's not like Batman and Robin, you know?
But I think that there's a difference. I think in the public eye, again, for people that don't read comics,
certainly,
they
that's a big part of the speculator collapse of the 1990s, was the way that people at large who didn't know anything about comics thought they were really killing Superman, and then the arse fell out of it all when it came back 18 months later, or however long afterwards it actually came later. The whole world is disenfranchised to the notion of comic book death after that. And writers are not so stupid as to... well, most writers, I should say, you know, R.I.P. Nightcrawler, let's see who's bringing you back. Most writers, the wise writers, the guys who know how to construct a story, are savvy enough that they don't just that whenever they want to tell a story of this kind, that they do it in this way. It's something that has only crept up over the course of the last years. Mm-hmm. I don't think it makes the character reactions any cheaper when they come back.
Not if it's written into the story, and that's why I say there's two ways that happens. There's the way that you're talking about, which is more often in particular for prominent characters. You know, I said, you go back to the Batman, Superman, Steve Rogers, you know, and now going to be
Human
Torch.
Those are probably like the only three examples of this that actually exist, mind you.
Where that was the intention. Otherwise, you do have characters that are killed off. They're characters that nobody cares about, so nobody pays attention to it. The media doesn't pay attention to it. I mean, when Ted Kord got shot in the head, who in the media gave a fuck? And he's still dead.
Still dead.
You know what I mean? Still dead. No matter how much Diamateus cried and wept for four fucking
he
issues.
He's not
going
to come back to life until Dan Video and Jeff Johns have nothing to do with DC anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, that character's, you know, dead and gone, at least for the purposes of now. How long was Odin dead? 10 years?
Odin's been dead a good 10 years.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even really matter because of friggin' God.
Yeah, so
Ragnarok is cyclical, for God's sake.
It's a different thing, and
but then there's characters like if you're a supporting character, you're probably not coming back. Gwen Stacy's still dead.
Yeah,
Leanne Harper probably isn't going to get brought back in a hurry.
Nah.
Although I'm sure I'll rather forget Cry for Justice.
Yeah, so there's plenty of comic book characters. I mean, Blackest Night, if nothing else, was a big fuck you to the community to say, look, here's all of these characters who are dead. And they're going to probably
still dead.
Be dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're going to still be dead for quite a while. So don't tell us that we kill comic book characters off and then bring them back, because all of these motherfuckers are dead. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody comes back in comics. It's just the big ones, you know? I mean, there have been... I mean, Nightcrawler has been a particularly egregious example where you can't feel the death. I mean, it's true. Absolutely, comic book death has... we're all desensitized to it now. You know, Nightcrawler got an arm through him, and I'm like, right, he'll come back sooner or later. I wonder how... The answer is not, oh, God, no Nightcrawler. It's, oh, well, I wonder how they'll bring him back, you know? There is no drama to it at all. But whenever the story is smartly written, in the way Captain America and Batman and this were, it's not, you know, it's not like you don't shrug your shoulders and you don't roll your eyes and move on, because you know that this writer has a plan. Mm-hmm. And the unfolding of that plan is the story. You know, and the emotion is there in the story as well that adds to it and makes your characters more human as well. But whenever whoever the hell it was who wrote Nightcrawler dying, you know they're not going to be the guys. So it's been 5 years from now, and whenever they rehire Chuck Austin, because the X-Men still haven't managed to get their arses out of the fire yet, and he'll just bring back Nightcrawler because, you know, that's, you know, it's like there have been some dreadful resurrections. I mean, there have been some dreadful resurrections. I just mentioned one earlier in this show. I would rather forget that Aunt May didn't die. She was replaced by a genetically engineered guy. That is truly the worst resurrection in the history of comics.
Oh, come on. That never happened. Brand New Day eliminated that. Didn't happen.
I would like to believe, but I mean, I can't think of a worse example of somebody being brought back from the dead than that.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible. But anyway,
good actor stuff.
But I mean, like I said, it's a good story. That's what we're looking for. I mean, again, I don't care what the media thinks. They can go fuck themselves. The thing is that this is all about the story. This is all. I mean, that's what comic books are. It's the story, and it's who cares if they die and come back. It's a fucking comic book. All right, that's what the world is. It's a fantastic world. Amazing things happen. It's not the real world.
Well, whenever death is presented as the end of the story, there is an understandable cynicism.
Yes.
But whenever the death is just a step in the greater tale that is being told, it doesn't make me just go and just, you know, it makes me eager to see where it's coming from, where it's going next.
Amen, brother.
I don't believe every writer can pull this off, but Hickman has very quickly proven himself to be someone that I have faith in to tell a great story out of this.
I think this doesn't feel like an ending. I can't wait to see, okay, what's this going to do to Ben?
Yeah,
Johnny's like he's mean to him, but he's the bestest friend that he's got.
Yeah,
we've even seen characters, and maybe we will see it here as well. We've seen characters respond to death, Final Crisis being a very recent example, where everybody responded to the Martian Manhunter's death with the hope that he would eventually come back from the dead.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Identity Crisis? It was Identity Crisis, where Sue dies, and Green Arrow visits Green Lantern, visits Hal Jordan's grave, and says, when are you coming back? You know, there's an understanding in this. We can have attitudes like that. We may well have those attitudes out of Fantastic Four. I don't think we will, because the Fantastic Four is not a group of heroes who have had to deal with the idea of the resurrection from death very often. Reed appeared to die once. Ben actually did die, and then they went to heaven and got him back from Jack Kirby, who was God. And Sue's death.
I love Mark Waid.
I just gotta say, I was trying to explain that to some of my coworkers at lunch this week, and just the look of just confusion was amazing. It's like
Sue's two deaths were just marketing fakeouts. So, you know, Reed and Ben are the only two characters who have ever died, and Reed died like in 1992 or something. So, and Ben died in what, 2005-ish. So this is not a cast of characters who have had to deal with this as a concept very often.
Yeah.
So, haters gonna hate. Yeah. Bring on the next issue.
Yeah. Yep. Naysayers will say nay. So, hey! That's the show. There you go. Hopefully we weren't too mad and raging. I didn't rage as much as I thought. I could have raged more, I guess.
I think he got it out on the pre-show.
Issue's too good to sit and waste time raging about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the honesty of it. You know, Marvel, I'm kind of mad at Marvel. I'm really mad at the AP. I'm sort of mad at Brian Brushwood.
Put that on the front page. I think they should wait.
Yeah, and like I said, at least when you pulled up that link into Marvel, it had the image, and then it showed who, and then below that it said spoiler. So I'm like, really? If I click the link, I'm already spoiled. So,
yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, that's enough of that. So, this is Fanboy Versus. A couple of shout-outs again. We want to thank Nicole for coming back. So, she's regular now on the show if you missed that.
I hope I don't bore you guys.
No, it's great.
Oh,
We're loving having you. So
somebody else read in fast.
It's like you. Right? It's like you were on the show the whole time. You know, you fit right in. So,
oh, good. I love talking comic books. I may not read the same mainstream stuff, but I will. I'll start.
That's good. No. Well, we don't good. Want you that's to like conform thing. To us. It's like we need to cover more stuff. There are great comics out there that aren't put out by DC and Marvel. And, you know, they deserve some recognition. So, no, I'm more than happy.
Yeah, I'm just too scared to venture out.
I know. And, you know, when most of what you're buying is $4 an issue, thanks, Marvel, then it's hard to have the finances to do that. So, anyway, I want to thank Comic News International, comicnewsi.com. We are being double posted over there, so... Hopefully some of you have picked us up from there. We thank you for joining us. So you can always go to tfradio.net, and that's where there's a bunch of other shows as well. So again, check out some of our other shows as well. You probably listen to this and listen to Radio Free Cybertron, but there's a bunch of other shows on the network to check out. Amy has a new show that's about the Marvel 2099 world that I sort of started to listen to and then didn't finish.
I listened to it.
I've heard it's good. Is it good? Is it good?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I hope they continue that. That's kind of awesome.
If Triplett says it's good, I'm inclined to think it's good. So
I mean, they talk about Spidey 2099. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're getting close. We're coming up on our 1 year, I think.
Yeah, we're not too far.
So we should have a big...
Maybe next week.
Is it next week? God, I hope
maybe
not.
Next week. Maybe the week after.
Speaking of which, so if it is next week, then we'll delay it because I won't be here next week. I don't think Nicole's going to be here next week either.
I'm sorry. I got to go support my boys in the black gold.
So for those of you that are only geeks and don't follow sports, the Pittsburgh Steelers made it into the Super Bowl game, and I am a huge Steelers fan, as is Nicole. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Is that baseball? World Series?
Yes.
It's cricket.
Yes, it's baseball.
Cricket.
Sports, yes. You say.
Sports. Yes. So, no, it's American football, and it's pretty awesome, pretty big deal. This is the seventh potential
disputed
win for Steelers. So, anyway, very excited about that. I won't be here. I think Brian will be here, though.
Yeah, if Brian could be here to set up the Ustream for us, I'm sure Triplett and I could muddle on.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
I don't care.
Brian.
I think we should. I'm going to try to talk Brian to actually being on the show. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Brian, is it me? Brian, do you not like me? I know you're listening because you're messaging on boards.
You know, Brian. Brian is a trooper because he does so much stuff for
Does. I'm just teasing him.
Because you think of it, I mean, Brian does like Radio Free Cybertron and New Soundwave. They do those back to back on Wednesday, of which I just do RFC. And then I think he does, like, Outside the Cage, or I don't know, maybe he just runs that, I can't remember. But he ends up editing that as well. So and he's, you know, plus all the publicity and everything for the site. So, you know, it's try to give him a day off, you know. So
he is a renaissance man.
Yeah, he's the dude's machine. So, but anyway, so there you go. That's the show.
Hi, Brian.
So I won't be here next week, but, you know, please – you should tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.